Hello, folks, and welcome to the February 18th edition of Dead Pit Radio. I'm Uncle Bill.
I'm a creepy Kentuckian.
I'm Jessica.
By God, we got an action-packed edition of Dead Pit Radio for you this week, don't we?
I really can't wait. This is one of the few times that I've really been excited to get to the review portion of the show, but this is definitely that time. So much to talk about. So much going on in the movies that we reviewed.
Yeah, we do have quite a bit of stuff to talk about regarding Hatchet 2.
Yeah.
Which is one of the movies we're going to be reviewing a little bit later on. I'm looking forward to it too, by God.
Oh, it's going to be glamorously shit.
That's true. And we also have a movie that we did review for Dead Pit on the Road, but we're going to review it again called This on Blu-ray Diff, baby, and it's directed by Alex Adja from France.
Ooh.
It's Piranha. In 2D this time.
Yeah. But I guess the big news, or the big crutch of the show, is going to be the return of everybody's favorite doctor of Slipnomics, Michael Slipcase Felcher.
The Slipster.
Yeah. Slipster style.
Captain Sleepy.
Yeah. Iron Mike.
Yeah, we got a lot of interesting things to discuss with Felcher. We're actually going to give him a call here in probably about an hour or so and get the latest news on Blu-ray Diff. And we're actually... we're going to be able to talk about one in particular that we've never been able to talk about with him before, and he's going to give us a lowdown on, you know, what's going to be on that disc.
We're going to be breaking news and busting heads, if you will.
That's right, baby. And we also have a plethora of horror and non-horror news we're going to be discussing, and it's going to be an action-packed show. We got the mailbag, Return of the Mailbag over there. I'm looking forward to it. I'm ready for it.
I am too. Hopefully, this week won't be an hour and a half long session.
I think the
mail.
The bag is a little smaller this week, so
yeah,
it'll,
it's a little bit. It's not so deep.
The bag is shrunk.
We got a lot in the load.
Sometimes it has a tendency to shrink up.
It's a sandwich baggie this time.
The fans ain't gonna, you know, give you a big load this week. It's sort of a smaller one.
Because they relieved their load.
Yeah, they blew their load last week with those all those questions.
So true. It's kind of shrunk a little bit.
Yeah.
It's okay.
It retracted.
Yeah, we're definitely looking forward to talking horror again this week. And everybody have a good week. Of course, Valentine's Day was this past week.
It was. It was an amazing time.
Well, you by your mom,
Jessica and I.
No, you was my Valentine, Aaron.
We went out, me and CK did the Red Lobster.
Yeah.
Had the buffet.
What did you do for Valentine's Day, Jessica? You was by yourself.
I just sat there. Just did nothing. Just sat there and stared at myself.
Uncle Bill was eating chocolate covered cherries from my butt. It was a special occasion.
Oh my God.
It was a special occasion.
There's something fucking wrong with you, I swear it. Yeah. It was Russell May, or was it?
Russell Stover.
Yeah, he painted us a picture from beyond the grave.
That's true. But, hey, let's get right into the news. We do have a lot of it. So, kicking things off, of course, Jeepers Creepers 3. Now, it's had a little bit of a tough time.
Really?
Moving forward, MGM's, actually a lot of MGM stuff, because the studio's sort of been up in the air, back and forth with a few companies over the last couple of years. But the movie is indeed creeping along, they say. The film, if the film does come to fruition, it'll be after director Victor Salva shoots Rosewood Lane. Salva spoke to our good buddies at Fangoria recently and said the following about the third installment of the Creeper series. He says, though I have been beating this drum for so long that people have started to not believe me, a la John Carl Beekler, I am told that I'm very close to closing the financial deal with the third film in the trilogy. He says, I want to say yes, but let's not jinx it by saying any more. My script for the film, which was written some time ago, sets up a TV series that features Poho County and the Creeper. The script has been ready to shoot for a while now, so we'll have to wait and see with Jeepers Creepers 3. Hopefully, it can improve upon Jeepers Creepers 2, which was a giant piece of shit.
Yeah, did you see, Jessica, did you see Jeepers Creepers 2?
Oh, yeah.
Please tell me you didn't like it.
I didn't really like, the only part I liked about it was Justin Long, wasn't it?
Was he in that too?
Yeah, he had like a small part in it where he was, something was going on with the girl, I think it was Maisie or something was her name, and she was the one flipping out on the bus and everything, she kept seeing into the future and shit, and then he was all waving his arms and crap, so she...
Very true.
So, he was in it just for a second, that was the only thing I really liked about it.
That was just... a miserable time for me watching that
movie.
Wasn't
it just like the South Park, one South Park episode, too?
Where they're all
like,
stuck on the bus, yeah. And the, what's that thing's name that's coming after them?
Scuttlebutt.
Wow, I couldn't remember that.
Well, that's classic South Park. That was before, you know, they've started with all this bullshit recently.
I like the new South Park.
Mm-hmm. Let's not get off on a tangent here. I think we all would agree that South Park is an awesome show. But Jeepers Creepers 3 will probably
still
be shitty.
Still awesome. Jeepers Creepers 3 is going to be horrible, though.
I don't know if it could be any worse than the second one.
Well, a lot of people don't even like the first one, to be honest. I thought the first one was really good.
The first half of it is really good, but then it falls off.
I liked the first one. I thought it was kind
of
cool.
I thought the
different.
Ending of the first one was really good, too. The way they chose to end it.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting that. I thought that was going to be fine.
And, of course, yeah, we can't mention Jeepers Creepers or Victor Salva without mentioning the guy was convicted of child molestation.
Yeah, let's just hope that Jeepers Creepers 3 is light on the teenage molestation.
Yeah, and don't allow any young boys on the set of Jeepers Creepers 3 because, you know, Victor Salva licks his lips for young children. It's true.
It is true. He did get convicted, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, he spent some jail time in there, so... No young kids on the set of Jeepers Creepers 3, folks. Let's keep our kids safe.
Hide your kids. Hide your
butt. Don't worry about your wife.
Yeah, don't worry about
your wife. Jeepers Salva has no interest in women of any sort. So.
All right. Lionsgate, Studio Canal, and Miramax announced they've entered into a worldwide home entertainment distribution deal.
Oh, good.
Under the long-term deal, Lionsgate and Studio Canal will distribute more than 550 titles from the Miramax film library on Blu-ray.
Yep.
The studio will soon release the Scream trilogy. Oh, that'll be killer. Pulp Fiction will finally get its Blu-ray release in June.
Ooh.
Says the first home entertainment release under the deal will be The Switch in the U.S., the romantic comedy about friendship, fertility, and family starring Jennifer Aniston and Jason Bateman. Who the fuck?
Sounds lovely.
Oh, God.
Oh, my God.
Fertility?
Apparently, the Scream Blu-ray releases will coincide with the release of Scream 4, which is out April the 15th. So that'll be killer. That's coming out.
I guess it'll be like a quadrilogy. Mm-hmm. They'll come out with it.
It says the guy Lang noted that while he is aware that the packaged DVD media market is maturing and consumers are beginning to look for digital alternatives, he also believes that we're seeing renewed interest in Blu-ray, and this will be especially true for Miramax given the fact that many of our titles have never been released on the format. He goes on to say the Miramax library will be one of the most treasured jewels in our home entertainment crown. Oh, it sounds like he's cutting a promo. With our long-standing commitment and expertise in aggressively managing library titles, we are thrilled to bring together under one roof such Miramax film icons as Shakespeare in Love, The English Patient, Pulp Fiction, and Good Will Hunting, mm-hmm. as well as Dirty Dancing and Monster's Ball.
Monster's Ball?
Monster's Ball is really good. I don't know if you've ever seen
that.
That's
the one where Holly Berry gets butt humped by Billy Bob Thornton.
And, no,
that's
that.
Yeah, that's another one, too, where, like, Heath Ledger was in it, and,
it's really sad. It's a good movie, though.
Yeah, it's kind of weird, too, because, like, Heath Ledger dies in it, too, doesn't he? Mm-hmm. Kills himself, I think, so.
I remember that Heath Ledger and Billy Bob Thornton were both fucking the same prostitute.
Yeah, in the butt.
I'm sorry, but like
same position and everything.
All those movies like that they mentioned in the first, Shakespeare in Love, The English Patient, Good Will Hunting.
You love Shakespeare in Love.
Some of your
favorites. All those movies are just fucking pretentious pieces of shit.
You know, the interesting thing is, though, and I figured you'd appreciate that bit of news because you get all the Lionsgate stuff, so this would be all your shit.
Yeah, that's true, but a lot of this stuff, except for the Scream ones.
You're going to get me Shakespeare in Love, but I want that.
Do you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Gwyneth Paltrow's in that, isn't she?
Mm-hmm. I think that's one of her first movies, actually. I think she gets naked in that movie, too.
Well, I'm looking... Well, a lot of people hate... Fiction. And I actually like The English Patient.
I actually like Gwyneth Paltrow, too. I think she's a good actress.
The English Patient, they had Ralph Fiennes in it, I think.
She's hot, baby. Mm.
I like Ralph Fiennes.
Yeah.
That faggot from Coldplay doesn't need her. Ralph Fiennes.
Woo! What's his name?
He
needed
to come over to me and hop on my face.
I think one of her kids' names is
Apple.
Apple and Moses.
Apple Blossom.
Apple was Chris, wasn't it? Chris.
Yeah, his full name's Apple Jacks. Paltrow.
Apple Jacks. The guy from Colby, his name is Chris something, isn't it?
Yeah, Chris Martin, is that
Martin,
his name?
Is
yeah,
that,
so it's Apple Jacks Martin.
Apple Jacks Martin. Moses is their other kid. Do you know what that Gwyneth Paltrow, their kid
Moses
has,
Martin.
Moses Martin, that's awesome.
That's fucking horrible.
Like, the one kid, the girl, her eyes are, like, on the opposite side of her head. She kind of looks like a fish.
Who?
Look, Gwyneth Paltrow's little kid, oh. Apple. Like, her eyes are kind of gravitated to either side of her
Apple head. Jacks Blossom.
Apple Jacks.
Martin. What the fuck is it with, like, Hollywood people and having their kids just...
One of them, his name is Jet. I think Jason Lee's kid's name is Jet.
Well, Jet is, like, normal compared to fucking Apple.
Yeah.
My name's Apple.
And then,
Was Tom Cruise and they have a
Shiloh.
Weird...
No, that's Angelina Jolie's.
Katie Holmes and Tom Cruise, they have a weird name for their kid, too.
Yeah. Fuck, I can't remember, though.
I don't know.
Yeah, it's a girl, too.
Yeah. She's kind of cute, the little kid. Didn't he buy an ultrasound machine so he could, like, have an ultrasound machine at home and so he could look at his baby all the time with Katie?
Probably.
I think they made that illegal after that.
That's a
after
creepy,
because he donated it to, he donated it, and then they said, no, you're not allowed to buy medical equipment like
what's
that.
What's strange, too, is those, like, ever since.
Like, Surrey. Surrey, that's it, yeah.
Sounds like somebody from fucking Star Wars or something.
It's a tail gunner in Star Wars.
Surrey Skywalker. What's weird, though, is, like, ever since, I guess, the last 3 or 4 years since Katie Holmes and Tom Cruise have, like, hooked up, and now she's sort of been brainwashed into the whole Scientology thing and all that. She looks sickly now. Like, I don't know if you've noticed.
She looks like she's got hip.
She hangs out with Victoria
jaundice.
Beckham. Victoria Beckham
Victoria
weighs,
Beckham,
like, a whole
yeah.
3 pounds.
Looks like a yeah. fucking, looks like Skeletor.
It's a shame, because, you know, Katie Holmes was...
Katie Holmes was
in
really
The Gift. Oh, my God.
She, I liked her. Did you ever see the movie Go?
Ooh.
It's a drug movie. It's Timothy Olyphant in it.
Well,
he'd
that's
love
a good
it.
Reason for me not to watch it. another sequel, though, we need to talk about. I didn't even know this was a possibility. Bruce Willis, in his fifth outing as Detective John McClane in Die Hard 5. The movie scored its director in Noam Murrow, who's best known outside of the ad agencies for his debut feature, Smart People, which I've never heard of. There have been rumors circulating over the last few months about 20th Century Fox wanting another installment, with Skippy Woods, baby, working on the script. This is a long Murrow has only directed one film. He has been nominated 5 times by the GA for his commercial work. Oh, yes. And, Bruce Willis has yet to sign on for, the fifth movie, but he's shown a lot of enthusiasm for returning to his, best love franchise. The previous installment, Live Free or Die Hard, was released in the summer of 2007, and it grossed $383.5 million worldwide. And there's no word yet on who else may return for the sequel. So.
Hopefully Justin Long.
Oh, God.
I like him.
Well, Timothy Olyphant, ain't no way he can return. They killed his ass.
They killed him.
Yeah, thank you.
That's good.
Yeah. Die Hard 5.
You need to calm down on that.
The weird thing about that is, though, I've liked every one of those movies. Like, there hasn't been one of those movies that I didn't like, so I'm kind of excited with it.
I think Live Free or Die Hard, though, they were a little, they had some bizarre casting choices in that, though.
Timothy Olyphant being the biggest one to me.
No,
like, he
there's
sucked.
Absolutely nothing wrong with that.
Did you see it?
Yes, I did. I've seen it a few times.
You cannot tell me he was a good villain in that movie.
He was good.
Put aside, like, your personal preference for his dick and everything, and just answer the question honestly if you thought he was as good a villain as anybody else in that series.
Yes.
He was better than Jeremy Irons.
Well, okay, see, now there's a tie, because I really like Jeremy Irons, too. I like Jeremy Irons a lot, and I like Timothy Olyphant. They're both good.
That's the power of the cock right there, because you clearly are like looking over.
You're dreaming about Timothy Olyphant's baby dick.
Timothy Olyphant's a good actor. He's good. I like him.
He didn't fit in that role, though.
He did, too.
He really did.
Why?
He was boring.
You guys are just completely jealous.
No charisma.
Of him. I think.
No, why the fuck would I be jealous? I can understand his ass. I just hate the motherfucker. I've hated him before I even knew you.
Well, that still goes to prove that there's. You always say that a lot of women hate Jennifer Carpenter because, what, she's pretty or something? She can't act. I think that she just can't act. She's annoying. So, and I always said that I didn't like her, and you always like her.
Well, here, how about this, though? I think Angelina Jolie sucks as an actress, but she's really, really hot. So, how about that? And Jennifer Aniston's hot, and she fucking blows.
But that's not the same, because they're old.
Yeah, and all the porn stars I like, they're hot, and they blow a shitload. They fuck and blow, baby.
They do.
This is not going to go anywhere.
Yeah, but hopefully, yeah, Timothy Oliphant and Kevin Smith, both of them, like, it was bizarre. It was like, what the fuck?
Oh, God. Okay. Woo! The Stand remake. There's more news on this. Holy shit. Stephen King has revealed in his latest column for Entertainment Weekly that he didn't know anything about the remake until I read about it on the internet. In regards to news this week of a film adaptation of his classic 1978 novel, the quote is a part of a list of 10 things King had to say about the adaptation, the other most notable item being that he believes you absolutely can't make it as a 2-hour movie.
Nope.
If it was a trilogy of films, maybe. He hints that he certainly doesn't get any financial rewards from the film. He says this time people will probably say the miniseries was lots better, but historically speaking, movie studios blow the budget on things like this, so maybe it'll be fun to look at. The dough certainly isn't going to me, although if it is a trilogy and if it makes a lot of money, I might be able to buy chicken dinner at Popeye's. King believes...
Well, fuck, I don't think he needs any more money.
No,
he's got enough. He can give some away to me.
He says he'd pick Jake Gyllenhaal for the role of Stu.
Stewie! No, but I'm willing to bet that Stephen King loved all the Mick Garris adaptations. Nobody else did, though.
That's true. I don't know why that is either. But he's right, though. There's no way you could do that as a 2-hour movie. Mm. It'd be friggin' impossible.
And it's going to be lame and boring.
Maybe they could just have a bunch of montages.
What you need is a montage.
It's going to be boring even if it is put into a trilogy because it's just going to keep going on and on. Now, as soon as you get excited about the next step that's going to happen, then it's going to end and you have to wait a year and everything. The Lord of the Rings, when they did it, that was pretty good because each segment had something really awesome to it. The Stand is it's not going to work. If they even put it into a trilogy of 2-hour movies, it's just not.
Why? Okay, I've never read The Stand and I've never seen the miniseries. Why couldn't it be 2 hours?
It's
just
like
too long.
Epic.
Yeah, it's just way too. There's too much stuff going on.
Yeah, but like you said, though, it sounds like to me there's a lot of boring shit in it. So why couldn't they cut out a lot of the.
It follows like a bunch of different people at one time, though, which, I mean, there'd be no way you could do all those storylines within like a 2-hour movie.
The miniseries is really good. It is really good. The book is fantastic. It's just. Even the miniseries, there's parts in it that lack just like everything from a book to a movie that doesn't. That's not, what was that what I'm looking for? It's not brought over to the movie very well.
Carried over?
Yeah, something like that.
Adapted.
Not, yeah, it's not adapted very well. But, and it's going to lose even more when it's made into a big screen movie in 2-hour segments. So every single time that there's a climax, it's not going to follow. So you have to wait.
Should be honest, though. Like, the only reason they want to make that is because that's one of the last big Stephen King novels that hasn't been made into a movie like that. They just want to cash in on that name.
I think they should just have gone. I know the whole thing with Eli Roth and everything, but I think they could have just stuck with Cell. I think that they could have done something with that. It has the whole zombie thing. Everybody's into zombies. And everybody
likes
Stephen King.
Yeah, but if you had Eli Roth controlling it, I mean, it would be guaranteed.
It wouldn't matter anyways because he's making money. A lot of the people out there don't really give a shit.
Well, I think the studios do, though, because, like, Hostel 2 was a huge bomb, and that's why he hasn't directed a movie in, like, what has it been, like, 3 years? 4 years?
Hopefully he never will again.
But we're going to take a break, actually, right now. We do have a bunch of other news topics to get into, but we're going to do that after this break here on DeadPit.com. You know what, Uncle Bill?
Shut your fucking mouth right now.
No. I want to talk about Fast Custom shirts.
Holy shit. Well, let's talk about it.
FastCustomShirts.com provides some of the best horror t-shirts I have ever fucking seen.
I don't think that you can really fully appreciate how awesome the t-shirts are over at FastCustomShirts.com until you go over to FastCustomShirts.com and look for yourself.
Yeah. The Hitman T-Shirt Joe. Mm-hmm. The highest quality of shirts that I've actually designed some of, Uncle Bill. He actually lets the fans design some of the shirts for his site. Who else does that? Who else?
Nobody I know of. But when he's not busy playing with Carmen Opsie, he's busy cranking out some of the most high-quality fucking shirts that you're going to find this side of any other damn whore t-shirt maker.
Yeah. So check him out. FastCustomShirts.com. The best there is.
The best there was.
And the best there ever will be.
It's a boot respect.
Howdy, folks. Welcome back. It is February 18th, and we're talking horror like no other. So let's talk about Super 8. This is a movie that's been referenced online for the last 2 years or so, I guess, since Cloverfield. And J.J. Abrams...
Dynamite!
Woo! ...has finally spoken about his highly secretive project in a lengthy article for the L.A. Times. Abrams himself would rather keep quiet about it, but producer Steven fucking Spielberg.
Wow.
And the studio have asked him to talk about the project a bit more as the film has to stand toe-to-toe with some of the major franchises also opening this summer. He said, "We have a challenge on this movie. Yes, we've got Steven's name on it and my name on it." Well, his name means just as much as Steven Spielberg's. J.J. Abrams, goddammit, the motherfucker brought a Star Trek remake. Says, "But for what it's worth, we've got no famous superhero, we've got no pre-existing franchise or sequel, and it's not starring anyone you've heard of before. There's no book, there's no toy, there's no comic book, there's nothing. Nothing." He says, "I don't have anything. I don't even have a board game." And that's how bad it is. He needs a fucking board game to market this movie, Uncle Bill. But he says, "I think we have a very good movie." The project began as two separate films, a small and a non-fantastical, whatever, I don't know, coming-of-age tale of the kids shooting their home movie on a high-concept project about secret trains shipping things out of Area 51 in the 70s. Sounds like something from Unsolved Mysteries.
Mm-hmm.
The idea was ultimately fused into this project. The plot is described as Fringe slash The X-Files meets a throwback of the 80s coming-of-age genre movies like Stand By Me, The Goonies, and most visibly E.T.
Oh, shit.
So I have to fucking see it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to tell you that, even though it has X-Files ahead of those awesome flicks. The story is set in Ohio in 1979, where a group of six young friends are trying to make their own amateur zombie movie using an old Super 8 camera. During filming one night on a lonely stretch of rural railroad track, a train carrying cargo from Area 51 collides with a truck and derails. An inhuman beast escapes from the wreckage.
Mm. Oh, shit.
While E.T. explored the emotional fallout of divorce and a family in mix with the sci-fi trappings, Super 8 will explore the issue of loss as it starts from a small town factory death and the impact on the victim's family. He says, "This is a movie about overcoming loss and finding your way again and finding your own voice. A boy who's lost his mother and a man who's lost his wife. There's a father who, because of the era, never really had to be the parent. He's a good man, works hard. He's a deputy in the town, and he's never stepped up as a father." So this is probably going to be the big money maker, or I don't know. We'll have to wait and see, but it sounds like it's going to be the big movie of the summer. It's not already well established or whatever.
I like the fact he's using the reverse psychology approach on people. He's like, "I'm not going to do anything about it. It's not big at all."
Well, I think that's actually pretty cool to do that.
Yeah, I mean, you can't really do anything like that anymore since Cloverfield completely, like, cornered the market on that kind of marketing campaign. Cornered the market on the marketing campaign. But, yeah, you just can't do any more big mainstream publicity like these, all these summer blockbusters have. So I guess keeping it a secret would kind of be a better idea at this point, because it seems like it's not really a big movie. It seems like if it's going to be on a Super 8 kind of, filmed on Super 8 kind of film like that, then it's going to be more like a Blair Witch style.
Well, he doesn't really say it's filmed on that, though. I mean, I don't know how they're going about filming it. We'll just have to see, but
I'm imagining that that's what they're doing, though. I don't know. It's called Super. Who knows?
Yeah. We'll have to wait and see. But I'm definitely, I mean, Steven Spielberg nowadays doesn't really put his name on much. So, I mean, maybe there's something to this.
If it is Spielberg, though, I mean, you know it's going to be good in some way.
Yeah. I have faith in Steven.
Oh, he never lets us down.
That's true. I mean, the thing is, like, Steven Spielberg, especially, you know, in the 80s, throughout the 90s, most of the stuff that he was associated in was guaranteed gold. Mm. You know?
The thing about him, too, is when he produces a movie, he basically takes it over, from what I've understood.
Yeah.
I mean, if it doesn't look a certain way or if it doesn't turn out a certain way, like, he won't let it go through. So it's like he's almost the one doing the whole movie.
Well, you know, I would like to have an idea for a movie and not really know how to do it that much, and then go and have Steven Spielberg back it, because it would be a good idea.
Yeah, because he'd just take over, and then it'd be
$400 million.
I'd get all the credit, and he'd take over, and I'd be rich. I'd be like, yeah.
Well,
like Toby Hooper.
Yeah, anything he produces, though, always just has his name plastered on it, though.
Yeah.
It's not like even The Goonies, you know, which he was a producer on that, but it did have Steven Spielberg Presents and stuff all over the poster and, you know, the beginning of the movie and stuff like that. And I remember as a kid, I just assumed that Steven Spielberg, that was like his, that he directed the movie and everything, because it does, a lot of the Spielberg movies in the 80s sort of had that same look to them, you know.
Yeah.
But, yeah, Richard Donner was lucky enough to technically direct that movie, I guess.
Well, yeah, everybody that came into contact with those movies was lucky. But here's something that you won't have nearly as much confidence in.
Ooh.
Wrong Turn 4.
I have confidence in it.
20th
George Clooney's in it.
20th Century Fox Home Video is moving forward on a fourth entry with Declan O'Brien of Wrong Turn 3. Returning to the director's chair.
Well, fuck.
They had to get him back.
Wrong Turn 3 was just so amazing. I'm glad that they... You gotta love Wrong Turn 3.
Actually, Wrong Turn, it pretty much fucking petered out after Wrong Turn. Like, Wrong Turn 2 was...
I was cracking up. I faintly remember Wrong Turn 2. I remember Henry Rollins was in it.
You remember the... mutants in it, though, this time were just Asian kids that they put a little bit of makeup on.
It's been a long time since I actually seen Wrong Turn 2. I'd never seen Wrong Turn 3. So, I mean, I don't...
Wrong Turn, like, I didn't like Wrong Turn 2 when I first saw it. But I gotta say, like, after watching it again, it's really pretty fucking hilarious. I mean, in a lot of ways. I don't think they were trying to make a serious movie at all. But man, there's nothing at all entertaining or interesting or anything about Wrong Turn 3. So, Wrong Turn 4 being directed by the same guy, I don't know. I don't have much hope for it.
I always like crack up how in all those movies with they're all deformed and they're all products of incest, and they always end up raping all like the normal girls that they try to kill, and they try to use them to make more babies and stuff. They do that a lot. They did it in The Hills Have Eyes and everything like that.
They wanted to eat a baby in The Hills Have Eyes.
They did try to rape people in all those movies, though.
They do. They're a big fan of...
They're horny mutants.
Yeah. Every time that happens, they always gotta rape someone.
Apparently, like, mutation causes you to be incredibly horny all the time. You're going around, like, trying to fuck lizards and
walking
stuff out
the
desert.
Walking around with a baby dick 24 hours a day. Oh,
God. I got to fuck this iguana.
They're going to make a mud puddle and fuck it.
Now, Wrong Turn, though, is kind of like the sequels and the ages for films like Children of the Corn and Silent Night, Deadly Night. I mean, some of those movies should never have had as many fucking sequels as they did, and Wrong Turn is one of those movies, though. Mm-hmm. It's like the new generation of those.
Well, hell, I mean, what about movies like Lost Boys, which they've just now started making sequels for, and who knows when they're going to quit with that shit.
Maybe when Corey Feldman dies this time.
Corey Feldman's going to die now, and then they'll make, like, it'll star Jameson Newlander.
Well, you saw the third one, didn't you?
No, I never did see it.
James Newlander's in that film about, for a total of, I'd say, 5 minutes. I don't even have any idea why they would even advertise him as being in that movie, really.
Well, it's not like he's a big draw anyway.
Yeah, but it's like, they're putting the Frog Brothers back together. It's all Corey Feldman, like, until the very end of the movie.
And then you see him, and then he tries to get him to be not, he tries to make him not a vampire anymore. It's
I like
strange.
The fact, though, that Corey Feldman really hasn't changed hardly at all. He
Except
looks,
he's become an even shittier actor.
He really has.
Like,
Jesus
he was an
Christ.
Awesome actor when he was a kid.
You gotta wonder, and we'll talk about this more when we get to Hatchet, too. What the hell happens to child actors when they grow up? They just completely go fucking retarded. Like, they can't.
Injury.
Yeah, they can't even act at all anymore. I don't know what happened.
Their eyebrows mutate. But I was talking about, though, like, it looks like the exact opposite as far as looks goes with Jameson Newlander. He looks like a fucking 50-year-old man.
Yeah, he looks really bad in that movie, too. It's bad news. It's a bad time.
Yeah. So is that it?
No, there's one more story on there, buddy. You got to read it.
Pet Sematary remake.
Yeah. Yeah.
Immediately.
Okay, this is interesting as hell because last year, 1408 writer Matthew Greenberg was brought on to pen another adaptation of Stephen King's Pet Sematary for Paramount. Now, they're wanting to remake Pet Sematary because, hey, they've remade every damn thing ever. Nearly a year on, and this must be the awesomest job ever to get hired to fucking, like, write a fucking remake. All they gotta do is go back and like, okay, let's watch this. Yeah. Okay, yeah. Don't go down that road. What do we do? Nearly a year on, though, he seems to have finished the script. It took him a damn year to go back and rewrite all this shit.
Yeah.
It was probably high most of the time.
New York Times reported that the script is ready to go out, and Paramount have put a request for a high-level director, folks. They don't want no music video director this time. They want somebody that's actually directed a film before.
They want fucking Nimrod Annle for this one.
The long-gestating new adaptation of the 1983 King novel follows a family who moves to a small main town along the highway, often used by high-speed trucks, and nearby lies a pet cemetery, and further beyond that is an ancient Indian burial ground which can resurrect the dead.
That's all different. I have no idea. That sounds completely different.
But those who come back aren't quite right. When the toddler son is killed in an auto accident, the grieving father uses that power, but at the cost of several lives and his own sanity. And Paramount previously adapted the book in 1989, starring Dale Midkiff, Denise Crosby, and Fred Gwynne.
I know what you're planning on doing, sir. You don't want to go down that road.
Go finger fuck yourself, Denise Crosby.
You're not going to bail out kid in that pet cemetery, are you?
Oh, that's an interesting story. And a good walk. I'll tell you all about it sometime. I'll tell you the story, too, after you play with my balls.
How you like that, Denise Crosby? I like how you're... Fred Gwynne has a dash of, like, Sean Connery in it, too.
Who might you be, little shit?
I'm some dumb little kid. Oh, okay. That's
I
it, though.
I shit my pants.
It's the best thing we ever did. I'm fairly certain of it.
Yeah. So, got some interesting stuff opening theatrical that I definitely want to talk about this week. One that actually does sound pretty good. Unknown, which is directed by Wam Colette Sarah, who did Orphan, and is starring our good buddy Liam Neeson. The story revolves around Dr. Martin Harris, played by Neeson, who awakens from a coma only to discover that someone is taking his identity and that no one, not even his wife, believes him. With the help of a young woman, he sets out to prove who he is.
What the hell is it with Liam Neeson? He's becoming like Samuel L. Jackson, Robert De Niro. He takes every role that comes along.
Looks like it, last couple of years, it looks like he's been taking some better roles, though.
Well, I thought Taken was good, but what else has he been in that's been
well? Usually, if you keep taking roles no matter what, something's bound to be good.
Yeah. What was that one though? He was in with Christina Ricci. That was horrible.
Afterlife.
Yeah,
that wasn't horrible. I mean, that was all right. And I didn't think it was horrible.
It's pretty bad.
It was kind of boring. I mean, it wasn't like extremely bad. I've seen worse, but it was still pretty boring.
What else has he been in?
I was so
been
tired
in tons of shit.
When I seen it. I thought I was going to fall asleep. He's in what was he in? He's always doing some kind of shit where he's become an action guy in the end.
Yeah.
He's this normal father and then ends up trying to look for his daughter and then beats everybody up because he used to be private FBI guy and then he gets his daughter back. And
well, I'm sick
of
all this Liam Neeson bashing.
Well, I feel bad for him because I think he might be just be doing it because of his wife.
He's trying to bury himself in his work because of all that situation.
Yeah. That's probably what's
going
on.
That's my insight into it.
Figured it out.
He's probably banging some of the hottest hoes alive right now.
He just doesn't seem the type. I think that he's grieving still, and he's just, like you said,
another movie that we're all looking forward to, Big Mama's Like Father Like Son, which is directed by John Whitesell, who brought us Big Mama's House 2, Malibu's Most Wanted, and Blossom.
Wow. That's a resume right
there. This movie stars Martin Lawrence, who plays the FBI agent Malcolm Turner, and his nephew Trent, who go undercover in an all-girls performing arts school after Trent witnesses a murder.
Yeah. I gotta be honest, though. I really did like the first Big Mama's House. I don't know why. I just did, but I think the Big Mama's House franchise went steadily downhill after that.
Well, the first Big Mama's House had Nia Long in it. And I always like watching her in almost anything.
It also had, what's his face in it? The guy playing Sideways. I always forget his name.
Oh, Paul Giamatti?
Yeah.
I think he was in the second one, too, for some reason.
Yeah.
That's another guy that does any goddamn thing. Like, you see him in all kinds of shit.
That's true. Now, let's go for the DVDs and Blu-ray releases for February the 22nd. You have Memento, the 10th anniversary of Blu-ray.
Blu-ray deal?
You have the 48 Hours Blu-ray, which I'd actually like to see. Big Show, A Giant's World. Is that some sort of documentary
That's
on the Big Show?
Documentary about the Big Show's life.
Oh, my God. Embodiment of Evil, the DVD and Blu-ray combo from Synapse. This will be Synapse's, I guess, second Blu-ray release.
Blu-ray disc.
This is the Coffin Joe shit, though, I'm pretty sure. Like, it's
really?
Coffin Joe movie, yeah.
Yeah, I know Jerry Chandler, the guy from Synapse. He loves those Coffin Joe movies.
I've never seen one of them. I have no idea about any of them.
They're about Coffin Joe.
I don't know. I don't give
That's
a shit.
T-shirt Joe's grandpa.
Coffin Joe.
Instead of making T-shirts back in the day, he made coffins.
He made affordable coffins.
FastCustomCoffins.com. It's a website.
That's it, bitch.
Yeah. So what we're going to do is we're going to take a break, and we're going to get Michael Felcher on the line, and we're going to talk about some Blu-ray disc releases and some upcoming titles he's working on, baby. What do you think of that, Uncle Bill?
We're going to slip and slide with him, with the slipster.
Going to slide, slippity slide.
Really?
Here on Dead Pets.
No.
God, you suck. .com.
Stop the gun. Stop it!
This is Killer Street. Here, anything goes. And that's no jive. There's one dude they all rap about. They call him Super Dude.
Hey, listen, man, I'm working undercover.
A mellow cat with chicks.
Well, I could be through here by midnight.
A cool, mean cat, a rip-off stud.
I'm gonna nail him if it takes my lifetime.
Nothing. Nobody stops Super Dude.
Don't move, don't turn around. I'll pull your bed off.
The one killer killers fear. Super Dude. Rated R. Under 17, not admitted without parent.
Hey, I'm Scout Taylor Compton, and you are listening to DeadPit.com.
Baby, one, two, three, four. Baby, check, 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 baby, one, two, three, four.
Howdy, folks, and welcome back to Dead Pit Radio. We're getting ready to enter into the most anticipated segment of the entire year, once again, with the Doctor of Slipponomics, Michael Slipcase Felsher.
The mic check.
Yeah, this is the mic check. Howdy, sir. How are you?
I'm fine. And guys, if this is the most anticipated segment of the year, you guys need to get some other guests.
Well, honestly, we don't have many reoccurring segments.
No, you pretty much have one-time-only things, and you're like, whoa, that was weird. And that's, you know. But hey, you know, actually, since I don't get to call anymore, maybe I can be like a call-in guy. So, hey, what's up?
What y'all doing?
How's it going?
What are y'all doing? What are you doing? What's going on?
What's the topic?
Yeah, what are we going to be talking about?
I miss the call-ins, damn it. I want them to come back.
They will eventually. I know how it is. I know how things work around here.
Yeah,
they have to come back.
They, you know, odds are we'll come up with something. We'll bring them back at some point.
That's good. All right.
So anyway, I mean, anybody that doesn't know you is obviously not ever listened to this show, but you are, of course, the master of all things, I guess, Blu-ray related. Now DVDs really took a back seat to the Blu-ray title.
Yeah, now on Blu-ray and DVD.
It's amazing how many Blu-rays I've been working on now, more as opposed to DVDs, just in the past year and a half. I'm still doing DVD stuff, but if there, 9 times out of 10 is I'm doing it for Blu-ray, and then they just take that stuff and put it on a DVD. I've been doing a lot more HD. I've been shooting everything in HD for the past, 5 years almost now, but
yeah.
Now I'm actually starting to deliver in HD, which is great because the stuff, you know, looks really good when it's presented in HD.
Yeah, and that's mm-hmm. and that's making it good too, where you can sort of just reuse a lot of the stuff for the newer releases on Blu-ray. And mm-hmm. I think a lot of the studios, you know, the people that were doing the extras weren't shooting in HD, and so for you, it works a lot
better.
Sometimes
they were, and they just were delivering in standard def because there wasn't really a need to deliver in standard def. I mean, you always would want to shoot in HD anyway, just because it looks better when you down convert to standard def.
Mm-hmm.
I've been shooting, and there's been instances where I've gone back and re-delivered something in HD for a Blu-ray, like I did on Monster Squad, where originally all that stuff was posted in standard definition, but I went back and fixed a few things and did a new edit and added a few new interviews for the Blu-ray documentary. So that was, but all that stuff was originally shot in HD, so it now looks 100 times better. So there's been, you know, instances like that where I have been able to go back and re-deliver. But normally, you know, there's some projects I'll never be able to do that on, like Texas Chainsaw Massacre or Texas Chainsaw 2, because those were the last two I shot in standard def. So that's what you get for those. But sometimes, like, it was weird. Like the Blade Runner documentary that was done for the big Blade Runner set, all shot in HD. But he had the guy did that. He had to deliver in standard def because Warner Brothers didn't want to spend the money to have a Blu-ray just for the documentary.
Huh,
so it was just in standard def, which was, I thought was a shame because that was such a nice looking piece.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as stuff that you're working on, you're actually doing a whole lot of stuff with Blue Underground.
That's been really fun. I mean, Bill started last year. I got back in touch with Bill. Ironically, the first thing we worked on was Zombie, which is probably one of the last things we do this year. But there was a big reunion at Cinema Wasteland of 4 of the cast members. And I just contacted Bill out of, you know, curiosity. I said, are you going to be doing Zombie at any point? And he said, yeah, we actually are working to get that back going. And he said, well, this is a great opportunity to get these guys. So I went ahead and shot a whole bunch of stuff at that weekend with all 4 of them. And that's going to be its own separate featurette on the upcoming Zombie Blu-ray. And then there's going to be other stuff as well. We're going to shoot some stuff in Italy with a whole. But Bill has made it a point. He wants this one to be a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
Zombie's going to be a big release, and he's doing a whole new transfer in HD from the negatives. This is going to blow away any previous edition of Zombie that's ever been out there.
And let's be honest. I mean, most people that got into Italian horror films usually transition into it through Zombie.
That was like, yeah, that one tended to be the gateway to a lot, because it certainly was for me, because I think most people, you know, they were into domestic horror zombie films, they loved Dawn of the Dead, oh, what's this Italian zombie movie? Zombie was always perceived as a ripoff of Dawn of the Dead, and while it was mm-hmm. certainly financed and certainly became, you know, what it was because of Dawn of the Dead's success, it's a much, much different film. And yet it still has a lot of the good gory moments, and it's it's as quintessential a Fulci film as any. Mm-hmm. I mean, so it was definitely it's the one that most people, you know, they lost their Italian horror virginity to Zombie. So it was that's going to be great. It's going to be great to see that one. And the stuff we shot at Cinema Wasteland was just fantastic. It's going to be in 2.35:1 widescreen, just like the movie, and we shot it all in a really cool way. It's going to be very different than a lot of the stuff I've done. I'm really looking forward to Zombie coming out. I mean, I can't really go into a whole lot of details yet as to what's going to be on the disc, because that's still all being worked out. But anyone who was at Cinema Wasteland knows who was there, and believe me, they were filmed for it. So they'll definitely be on the disc.
Cool. Now, is there like a timetable when that one could be out? Maybe you said it might be a little while? Or?
I think Bill's plan, again, that I can't speak 100%, but Bill's plan was to definitely have that out for Halloween this year.
Very cool.
Again, plans can change, and I'm not making the official announcement. That's just what the plan is right now. But I'm sure you'll be seeing a lot more official announcements from them once we get closer to it. Because, like I said, we're going to hopefully be doing some filming in Italy with a lot of the other behind-the-scenes people. I mean, this is going to be a big, big special edition. That's the plan, anyway.
Very cool. Mm-hmm. I know another Fulci Blu-ray that you're working on for Blue Underground, of course, House by the Cemetery, which is another fan favorite.
Yeah.
And from what I understand, you're going to be doing a lot of that stuff. Whorehound Weekend coming up.
Yeah, that one's
going to
be a lot of
weeks.
People from, let's see, you know, there may be three or four that are a possibility of maybe one or two more. But I'm going to be filming a whole bunch of them too, and then we're also hopefully going to get some people in Italy for that as well. And that should be coming. That's definitely going to hopefully be this year, and probably be before Zombie. Again, this is just based on conversations I've had, that these are not to be taken as the gospel. But all the stuff that I'm talking about is definitely for this year.
Mm. Wow.
Yeah, the thing about House by the Cemetery we were talking about a little bit earlier is it's kind of like the one that most people perceive as the most lackluster of that trilogy of like The Beyond and City of Living Dead and then House by the Cemetery. But I think the more you watch that movie, the more it kind of grows on you. Even though like the dubbing does really take away from that movie. I mean, just
that one more than any of the others, because I mean it's actually, I think there's like four films kind of in that series. I mean, it kind of begins with Zombie. And then it continues with The Beyond and City of the Living Dead, and then it kind of ended unofficially in a way with House by the Cemetery. I guess some argument whether or not Manhattan Baby really belongs in there, but I don't think thematically it really does. And also, it's not nearly as interesting as those four movies. But House by the Cemetery is a weird, weird picture, because it's got very, very slow pacing at times. I mean, there's just times where there's nothing going on in that movie. But it's very atmospheric. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's all the setting. That house was just filmed in such a creepy way. But the kids, especially Bob, the kid Bob that Giovanni DeFrenza played, I don't know who the hell they got to dub him. I would love to know, because it sounds to me like a 60-year-old guy who just happened to be around. Hey, can you do a kid's voice? Oh, sure, I can do a kid's voice. Mommy, I'm scared, help me. That's what it sounds like.
It's like Mickey Mouse on crack or something in that movie.
It doesn't even sound that good.
Yeah.
I mean, it's one of the most distracting dub jobs I've ever heard in any movie, period. And it just took me out of the film. So it's going to be interesting. He's scheduled to be one of the guests at Whorehound. So I'm going to definitely ask him, did you ever hear what they did to your voice in the American? And if so, what the hell did you think? Because, my dear God, I hated your character. And it had nothing to do with your performance. It just had to do with the fact that they gave you the worst dub job ever.
Well, I think it'll be pretty interesting because, from what I understand, he is actually one of the guys that speaks English. He actually lives in the United States.
Oh, yeah?
Now. So.
Yeah, you never know with some of these guys. I mean, it's interesting. There have been people who I was told spoke English fluently and yet didn't know a word of it. And then there's people who I thought, you know, they never left Italy. Why would they ever know? And they speak English better than I do. So, I mean, I know there'll be someone there to translate should we need them, and I'm sure we will. I mean, we had that situation happen in Cinema Wasteland, because one of the actors, Ottaviano Dell'Acqua, who played the worm eye zombie, he didn't speak English. And another one spoke English well enough, but it wasn't really good enough for an interview, so we needed someone for that, too. But, you know, it comes up, but it's not hard. You know, it's pretty easy to communicate these things.
Yeah. But, you know, the only one, though, that you got to do, you were talking about all these zombie movies and stuff like that, you got to do the Blu-ray of Burial Ground. I mean, we got to have...
Oh, Jesus. You know what? In a weird way, I almost would want to do that just because that movie is so fucking awful. And it's so... It's one of those movies where we sat there and we watched it at Fright Night Film Fest last year. And it was one of those ones where you sit there and say, my God, I have forgotten how... Even by Italian horror standards, how illogical this movie is.
Mm-hmm. There's got to be some great stories behind that.
There
movie,
has to
though.
Be, because I mean, I want someone to explain to me why at this big wonderful Spanish mansion or wherever the hell it was, Italian mansion or wherever the hell it was, why is there a bear trap in the garden?
Why is there like a running saw in the middle of like?
Yeah, well, we literally at one point run into this one house where it looks like the set's still being constructed.
It is.
I mean, it's really, it's one of those things where it's like, what the hell? And what is up with the kid and wanting the mommy and the kid looking like he's 70 but he's not, and he's trying to, you know, have sex with his mom, and it's just, what the? I mean, this is one of those movies where after it's over, you're just like, I know I didn't like it, but I do have to say, what the fuck?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's just, and it's just, there's, for a film that's maybe only 90 minutes, it feels like it's 3 hours, because there's so many scenes of people just walking around and running from house to house.
There is.
And the zombies don't really do anything, they just kind of, how anyone got caught by one of those things is a mystery to me, because they're not even looking up, they're just kind of shambling around, looking at the ground, like, they're the most depressed zombies in movie history. They're just like, oh, shit, I don't care, man.
Yeah, they're not goal-oriented at all. They don't go after anybody or anything.
And I know there's people that love that movie, and I can understand why, because it's certainly a great party film. But, I mean, you cannot... It would be hard for me to do... I mean, I would do it, take it seriously, as seriously as you could take it, but... There's way too many questions I would have for Andrea Bianchi to sit down and go, so, what was this movie about? Exactly?
What was the point of this movie?
What was the point of this movie? Why is there a bear trap in the garden? Are there a lot of bears running around out there? I don't think there are. And if so, why would you just leave in an area where you know people are going to go through? I mean, it just comes so out, there's just so much stuff that I swear to God, it was like, how do we get her to fall down? Yeah, bear trap. Like, all right.
He's like, we got this set. We're not done with it yet. What do we do? You work with it. You work with what you got.
Looks
you know?
Like the new Yankee Workshop.
Yeah.
I know. Honestly, I don't want to sit here and keep bashing this film like it's a worthless piece of crap, because I'm sure they all went into it with the best of intentions, and it does have its share of atmospheric moments. But it really, it's just one of those movies where you just out loud you will just say, "What the fuck?"
Mm-hmm. I think that just by us talking about it like this, we probably sold about 20 copies of it.
Oh, it's definitely worth checking out. In a weird way, I have to recommend it, because it's like, if you can get through this and tell me even a half of what the plot is about, you're smarter than I am.
Well, I mean, I think I think Rob Scott recorded the commentary thing that we did. I don't know how well you could hear it. I don't know
if it was really a commentary. It was more like an MST3K kind of bashing of it. I think there must be at least 100 and 125 different times where I'm going, are you fucking kidding me? And I hadn't seen that. That was the first time I'd seen that movie in maybe 15 years.
Wow.
Because it was one of those ones I rented back when I was first getting in. I was gobbling up everything, so I had a very, very vague memory of it. But watching it again, it was just like, oh, I see why. I kind of blocked this out. I wasn't prepared to handle that back then.
But another reason, though, for sure, is if you could track down Peter Bark, the man that played the
man-child thing.
Yeah, I never heard the whole story that he was a kid. He looked older than he really was in real life or something, and that's why they cast him, because they could use him at all times. They didn't have to worry about child laws or anything like that, and they could put him in those weird sexual situations and it wouldn't be too weird, even though it comes off even weirder as a result of that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, I would love to do a behind-the-scenes thing on that, because I got questions.
Deep existential questions.
I got a lot of serious motherfucking questions about that movie, and I want some answers. So whoever's doing a Blu-ray out there in the world, I will give you a good rate if you hire me to do fucking Knights of Terror, because I got some questions, motherfucker. I do.
Okay, but transitioning back, though, going from Fulci to another one of the, I guess, Italian directors that's the most famous, you're working on a set of Argento films as well. Probably, and the one that I think that you, that I noticed the most, because you actually designed the cover, didn't you, was Deep Red?
Yeah, that was an interesting situation. I didn't do any of the anything for the actual disc itself, because that, like Cat of Nine Tails, Bill had already done documentaries with Dario and a few of the other behind-the-scenes people for the old Anchor Bay DVDs, and they were pretty thorough. There was really no reason to update them. And all the other notable people were either completely unavailable or dead. So there really wasn't a, there wasn't really a way to update Cat or Deep Red to a large degree, so we decided to save, you know, time and production budget for the ones that we really could do something for. But with Deep Red, and I worked at Anchor Bay for 5 years, and during that time I would say there are five covers that we did that I absolutely could not stand. I mean, I hated so much that even the sight of the DVD just made me cringe. And one of them was the cover for Deep Red.
Now, the original
movie has a ton of incredible artwork from all around the world. I mean, there's been a lot of really different pieces that have been done for that. And somehow we ended up with a cover with a title treatment and a skeleton being
that's
lit
what
by
I,
a
yeah.
flashlight.
See, I've actually got that that Anchor Bay DVD, and it, yeah, it is just like a it's like a corpse.
I never did get that cover either.
Yeah, it's just
it doesn't make any sense. I mean, it's a it's obviously a bit from the movie, and ironically, that skeleton appears on the cover that I did for the new DVD, but this was just like a freeze frame or a photo from the movie, and it doesn't sell the movie at all. You're just like, well, it's just a skeleton sitting on a goddamn cover. What the fuck does this have to do with it? It was terrible. I hated it, and I made no secret about it. I said, this cover blows. I don't know who came up with this, but they should be shot.
Well, it's bizarre, too, because Anchor Bay at the time were mainly just reproductions of the original poster a lot of
the
time.
I know, and that was the thing I didn't get either. I mean, for all the great covers that we did back then that used original cover art, and with one that had as many great pieces as Deep Red did, all of a sudden this one shows up. And that would happen every now and then. You know, you'd be like, oh, that's great, that's great, that's great. Oh, that's a turd, sorry. You know, it would just, there was ones like that, like Cut and Run was a popular example. I hated that cover. You know, they had that wonderful poster image of Michael Berryman with the machete, and it's like, why didn't we use that? Well, they didn't want to go with the poster art. But this looks like a bad Miami Vice episode cover. What the fuck is this? There were like five, like I said, there were like five covers that I just, ugh. So anyway, when Bill got the rights to Deep Red back and he put it out on Blue Underground, he changed the cover. He left the title treatment alone, but he swapped the images out and he put another image in of David Hemmings behind the girl that gets her throat slashed with the glass, which was better, but you still couldn't really make out what it was. It was just like, well, what is, I mean, it was just, this is better, but it's just a small step up. So it still bugged the shit out of me. So he announced the Blu-ray. I'm looking at the Blu-ray cover. It's, again, it's that thing with the, you know, David Hemmings. You can't even see his face and the girl with the blood. It just looked kind of cheap. And I thought, you know, look, I'm going to be nerdy fanboy here for a minute. And I've always liked the U.S. poster art, which was the doll hanging from the noose with the cleaver in her hand and the skeleton in the background. It's a really nice piece of art. And I thought, you know, if I could do a cover for this, what would it look like? Well, I went and I designed this whole damn cover and used that and changed the title treatment around. I did all this. And I sent it off to Bill of Blue Underground. I said, look, I don't know if it's too late. You may have already printed this. What do you think of this? Do you think this is a better cover? Would you consider using this if you could? And I'm fully expecting him to write back saying, nah, we're fine with what we got. We're kind of done with that. Well, sure enough, they said, yeah, let's use that. And I went, oh. You know, I was like, okay. You know, I was thrilled. So, yeah, they let me go back and make a few adjustments on my own, and then their designer just plopped it right in. So what you're seeing is, with the exception of one logo change at the bottom, exactly what I designed.
I want to have you sign mine.
it was awesome, and I was just like, and again, it's funny. A lot of people have really liked this cover, and most people agree it's a big step up from what was done before. But there's still people like, I still don't like that cover. I wish.
Oh, they can go to hell.
You know, there's always going to be nitpickers out there, but,
I remember that artwork was actually, that's the poster I've been trying to get because Argento, of course, is coming to Whorehound.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, that's harder than hell to find that at a decent price, but yeah, that's awesome artwork.
Yeah, so that was kind of just my little private nerd victory. You know, it's just like, I got to play nerdy, obsessive fanboy, and it somehow benefited me for once. So I give Bill and Greg there at the Blue Underground offices a lot of credit for humoring me and actually thinking it was good enough to be a DVD cover.
But this actually, though, continues a trend that I've noticed with this title coming out, that Arrow Video just released that title. Mm-hmm. Not too long. What in the hell is it with Arrow Video releasing that stuff, like, right before Blue Underground releases their stuff?
I really don't know. I don't know the relationship. I don't think there is a relationship really between Arrow and Blue Underground in any way, because I know for a fact that Arrow's Deep Red transfer is not what Bill is using. Bill is using a transfer that was literally done, I think, within the past year. Arrow's is one from about 5-6 years ago. And I don't know if they've ever shared transfers. I'm sure they probably have at one point or another, but Bill tends to work on his own.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's a matter of Arrow just wants to put the stuff out in the UK because the extras are never the same. You know, they do their own extras.
It's just
stuff.
Weird
and some of their
that they tag along like right at the same time.
I'd heard about their, and they have a Blu-ray of The Beyond,
mm-hmm.
which was supposed to come out this month, I think, but was delayed because, from what I understand, there's like a lawsuit going on between. Who owns The Beyond now? I think it's
Grindhouse.
Yeah. And
here in the U.S., they have the rights to.
Yeah, and I think there's some sort of discussion who owns the rights in the U.K. Oh. Maybe they own the rights too. I don't know, but that's delayed that release. And I'm sure, they couldn't be happy about it because like a lot of the Blu-rays that they release are like region free, so you can play them over here.
Well, I mean. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure if Bill had his druthers, he probably would just prefer there to be one release out there. But at the same time, I think any dedicated fans of these movies, if they're going to pick up the one from the UK, they're going to pick up the one here, too.
Yeah, I mean, that's true.
You know, I don't think you're just going to, and especially considering each release has things that are unique to it that are not on the other. And like with Deep Red, like I said, the transfer that Bill is using is a totally different transfer than the one that Arrow's using, and it's got the cool cover art, don't forget. Arrow's cover arts are fantastic because they come up with all those different.
But if you were to go by like City of the Living Dead, like the transfer, I thought the Blue Underground transfer was 1,000 times better than the Arrow
Video
transfer.
I haven't seen the one that.
But at the same time, I think that the Arrow had more extras or something like that. Right?
Yeah, I had some newer stuff on it. But then like Inferno, I don't know if it's the same transfer. I don't think that it is. But I mean, I've seen the Inferno transfer, you know, the HD transfer up close, and I think it's a beaut.
Yeah.
I mean, it's stunning.
It's
just amazing. But we did two interviews for that one that are not going to be on the Arrow version. So.
Now, what was the deal with Inferno, though? Like, you're working, we didn't mention that one yet, but you're working on that one as well, and.
Yeah, I finished that one already. That one's going to be coming out, I think, in March. Actually, it comes out the Tuesday after the Horror Hound show.
Oh, that's awesome.
So, yeah, I did two new interviews, one with Irene Miracle and, Lee McCloskey, the lead actor. And, they both turned out really well, but McCloskey's in particular turned out really amazing because he's a painter, a visual artist, on his own, and he was doing stuff even back when he filmed Inferno. So he still has drawings that he did on the set of Inferno that incorporated all the imagery from the movie. And he has this amazing studio in his home that we filmed in. I mean, I really like that segment a lot. And it ended up being a much more than just a standard actor interview. So I think people are going to get a real kick out of that one.
Yeah, there's several people that have told me about things that they have done while on the sets of these movies. Like, I know Angus Scrimm said he kept a journal through Phantasm, and you're just like, God, I would love to see what's in that journal and stuff, you know, as that movie goes on.
And Lee McCloskey, too, was also in Just One of the Guys, which is also, so I don't know if you touched on that movie at all, but he'd been in a couple other movies.
Oh, no, he's done a lot. He was in Fraternity Vacation. He was in a whole bunch of films in the 80s, and he's continued to be a working actor. But he's really become a very well-known visual artist on his own. I mean, when you see the studio he has and the work that he's done, mm-hmm. if you go online and check out his website, it's amazing stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, he's really gifted. So we were able to touch on some of that in the interview, and that made that interview, I think, a little bit more rewarding than just a standard actor interview, because we get someone who can really go into the artistic side of the process in a film that has a lot going on artistically.
Yeah. Did they talk? I mean, there's got to be some discussion about the underwater sequences in that film, because that's like.
Oh yeah, there was definitely. I mean, there had already been on the previous DVD quite a bit of that covered. And Irene, she had some memories of that, but most of her memories were of. She was very sick during the making of that movie, so her scenes were cut way back because Argento thought she was dying.
God, hurry up and get done.
You'll find that she had a. Not the easiest relationship with Argento on that picture, so she really kind of goes into that a lot. Not like mean-spirited, but just kind of like, you know, I was having problems and Dario thought I was sick, and so he decided not to use me for fear I was going to die on him. And so there's a lot of that kind of thing on there. It's very interesting, very interesting, very diverse kind of interviews that we got for that one.
Now, as far as, like, talking with Argento himself on these for interviews and stuff like that, is that something you got to do, or are you going
to... Well, we didn't have to, because Bill had already gotten interviews with him previously on the Anchor Bay DVD, so those are just repurposed. And at that point, Argento really wouldn't have had anything different to say that he didn't say 4 or 5 years ago about these movies. So we didn't feel the need to go back to get him again for that.
Okay. Now, I don't know if you've heard about this, and I don't know how close you are with Lionsgate still to this day, but I know for a while there you were doing a lot of their releases. And
the Miramax thing?
Yeah, about the whole...
Oh, yeah, yeah, I know about that.
Now, what would be your thoughts on that? Do you think you would be, that they would consider you for, like, you know, doing a new Scream box set or stuff like that?
I mean, I would have loved to have done that. I think they're going to be bringing it out pretty quickly because April's coming up, and I think that's when Scream 4 hits.
Yeah.
And also, if they were going to go with someone, there's some other folks I think that would be better suited for Scream because they've been working on some Scream stuff already for another project. So I really wouldn't have been the one to go to on that. There are other projects, though, that we have talked about, a couple in particular that might be a possibility. I can't say anything else more about it right now because there's really nothing firm. But
damn.
Come on.
Damn it.
What about Pulp Fiction? Would that be something you'd be interested in doing?
Oh God!
Who the hell wouldn't be interested in doing that? Are you retarded?
I would love to do something like Pulp. I mean, God, there's a whole bunch of them I would love to do. Pulp Fiction being one of them. The big thing with Pulp Fiction or like Kill Bill, because that's also part of the deal, would be just what would Quentin Tarantino do? Because it's weird, he doesn't do commentaries on his own movies usually, or the ones he directs. Mm-hmm. He'll do them for ones he's written that he didn't direct, or he'll do ones for, you know, like a moderator on a film he's a real fan of or something. But he doesn't tend to do commentaries for his own films, and the extras that have been on a lot of his films have been kind of inconsistent. So I don't know what their plans are for those. I'd love to be involved. Chances are I won't be, but hey, I'm, you know, my hat's always in the ring. But trust me, there are a couple things that if they come to pass will be pretty big. One in particular, which I can't talk about, if I did get the gig, it would probably be the most involved thing I ever do. You know, I'm really good friends with the people at Lionsgate. They've treated me well. I think I've done some good work for them. So there will definitely be some Lionsgate stuff in my future.
Very cool. And we all always want to touch base as far as, like, you know, a lot of the catalog titles. Because like you were saying, it seems like a lot of the stuff that is yet to be released on DVD mm-hmm. has sort of been lost. Like, nobody really talks about that stuff anymore, and there's still a decent back catalog of titles that have not been released on any of the disc formats yet.
No, yeah, there's quite a few. It's weird, like I did one that Synapse is releasing soon, The Dormant Drip Blood. That never saw a DVD release ever, but now it's making its debut on Blu-ray and DVD in the one package at the same time. So it's weird. The market has changed in such a way that some of the cult films are becoming accessible because the studios don't want to mess with them on Blu-ray. They're thinking it's like, we'll be lucky to get to half the stuff we got to on DVD. We're never going to get to this. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens going forward. But
they put some of this stuff out though on really, they just rushed out in these horrible formats. Like, I know Curtin's got, it got put on a DVD with like four other films and sold at Walmart for like $5, and the transfer
that
was like...
Yeah, I was surprised, but I was disappointed too, because curtains, I think, deserves better. It certainly deserves a new transfer.
Was that Lionsgate that did that?
I'm not sure.
No, Echo Bridge. Echo Bridge has the Alliance Atlantis catalog from Canada, which had curtains in it. So it looks like what happened, and I'll bet you anything this is what happened. We need four slasher films to go together. Look in the catalog. Is there anyone we haven't missed? There's one called Curtains. It's a slasher. Okay, put that up.
Yeah, that's probably exactly right.
I bet you anything that's what happened, too, because it looks like the old tape transfer. It looks just like shit. And it's a shame. I would love to do a new transfer of that one because that's another one of those films. I don't know if it's a good film necessarily, but it's a damn creepy one at times.
Yeah, and it definitely deserves, if some of these other films, some of the other slashers got put out, it definitely deserves a good DVD release.
Blood Diner is another one that we've talked about for the last couple
of years.
That
one's frustrating because Lionsgate, they were all ready to go, and I mean, I was really shooting stuff for it, and the market just kind of fell out for some of those smaller titles that they were doing, and they decided not to pursue it any further. And frankly, I don't know when that's going to get started up again.
Well, I mean, one thing that I'm surprised, since Lionsgate, they own, like, give a rough estimate of, like, how many titles they own that they haven't released yet, like back catalog stuff.
Oh, God, there's no way to say, really. I mean, they have a catalog that's a couple, down with the Miramax, probably 3,000-4,000 titles deep.
Why don't they do something like, at least with the titles, I don't think they're going to pay, like, extra, like a special edition treatment to, something similar to the Warner Archive thing. I mean, that
may be coming. Who knows? That may be something they decide to do. I know MGM's doing it, and I know Sony's doing it. Lionsgate may very well decide, hey, let's follow that route, too.
I know they released the Lost Collection, but I don't think that did very well, though.
I think that may have been more of the selection of titles they chose.
Yeah, a lot of that stuff really didn't deserve to be found, though. Even from a cult perspective.
The only one of the bunch that I was really interested in was Slaughter High, and it ended up not being a particularly nice-looking version of it. I got the one from overseas that actually looks pretty good. And it was just, I don't know. I don't know if that was necessarily the best way to launch that series.
No. And the cover art and stuff, too, really didn't help.
It made them look even
cheaper. The random, like, doodle drawing
of
this dude.
But going back though to Synapse, because Synapse was one of the companies that probably held out the longest of any even of the cult companies for putting out Blu-rays. But now they're finally starting to release Blu-rays.
Well,
and stuff
they
now.
Were smart about it for one thing, because Blu-rays have been they're much more expensive than DVDs to do, but compared to 2 years ago, the prices have gone down quite a bit. If they had jumped in too early, quite frankly, it would have not worked. With the titles they have, there's a specific audience that will buy a certain amount. And they needed to get to a point, and this is just good business, what's the point that we can afford to do Blu-ray and do a small enough amount that it turns a profit for us? So we're not stuck with a bunch of copies of this thing that we spent a bunch of money on that's going to turn around and bite us in the ass. So they waited and they waited, and they finally got to a point where it's like, okay, now we can jump in. And then they jumped in with something like Vampire Circus, which has done very well for them. And then there's going to be releases coming up that people are going to want to own on Blu-ray. And I think doing the Blu-ray DVD combo makes perfect sense. It saves money, saves packaging, and if you want the DVD, you have to buy this. And if you want the Blu-ray, you got to buy it with the DVD that you can give to your friends if you don't want it. So but, I think that, but, Synapse, I mean, those guys are family to me, and I've been working with them for so long. I just think that the reason they stuck around, so many other cult companies come out, make a big splash, and then, go under within a matter of months, is that they've played their cards very close to their vest. They take chances with a lot of stuff, but they're very smart about how they do business. And in the end of the day, that's what's going to keep you afloat in this industry more than anything else, especially through the rough times.
Yeah, very meticulous about the product, too, probably more so than any company I've ever seen.
More so than anybody else. Oh, yeah, Don May is just like the perfectionist beyond. I work with a lot of perfectionists, and Don, just trust me, when you see Dormant Drip Blood, there's a reason it looks as good as it does, and it's because of Don May, because he just wouldn't let it go.
Well, and there's, there's other titles that they've already released on DVD. There was one that we watched, Lamora, I think.
Oh, that was a
Child's
beautiful
Tale.
One.
Yeah,
that I can only imagine how that would be like one of those demo titles to go back and look at on Blu-ray.
Yeah, I mean, that's like an Argento color kind of movie. Yeah. I mean, that thing, that's just one of the most beautiful films I've seen. I mean, just the way that movie was designed, it's amazing. So, yeah, that would be an obvious Blu-ray candidate. And I have a feeling that once Blu-ray really gets rolling along, they will revisit some of their catalog in Blu-ray. I don't know if Lamora would be on the top of that list, but I'm certainly hoping it would be.
And I know Don May, of course, I keep up with all this stuff on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
And very busy guy. I think he's actually out in L.A. right now or recently.
He is actually on his way back right now today. I think he's finally back in the office tomorrow. But, yeah, he's had two separate trips out to L.A. in like the past 2 months. He's barely been home.
Yeah. And he's still, like, I think for the last little bit, I don't know how long, year or 2 years, has actually been remastering all these movies in 2K,
uh-huh.
which I don't know if you want to explain exactly what that is.
Yeah, well, basically, I mean, there's standard HD, which is 1080p, and then there's 2K. You know, basically, 2K is twice that, basically, roughly. I mean, it's not exactly, but 2K transfer is twice the resolution of what standard HD is, and then there's 4K. Now, some movies, some really important special films are transferred in 4K, like I think Alien was redone in 4K. And the advantage to that is it brings out every last bit of detail from, you know, these 35mm negatives and everything. I mean, with 16mm, quite frankly, 2K really isn't going to do much for you. At least I don't think so. I think with standard high definitions, about as much detail as you're going to bring out of an HD. I mean, it's probably better to do it 2K, but it's not going to be a world of difference. Whereas when you do it, you know, the more in resolution you go up, you can pull a lot out of a 35mm frame, especially if it was well shot, especially preserved really well. So he's doing a lot of them in 2K because that's where the future's going.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, in 5 years, people are going to be it just keeps changing. So he's doing 2K now to save himself money later and, you know, have the films look good now so he doesn't have to go back and redo them again in 5 years.
Yeah, because
Lustig's doing a lot of his stuff in 2K as well.
Yeah.
So, you know, a lot of people are.
Well, I think everybody sees, like, the technologies are just moving so fast now that, you were saying, within the next 5 or 10 years, instead of Blu-ray, it'll probably be 2K discs.
That's a possibility. I mean, there's always going to be something. Blu-ray is growing pretty fast. It actually had a really good year last year, and I think people are surprised that it is continuing to grow, even with, you know, digital downloads and all that stuff, because, quite frankly, there is nothing, no download, no on-demand, no streaming video is going to look as good as Blu-ray does.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just, I mean, not right now, certainly with the technology the way it is, and with the bandwidth and everything, it just can't. So Blu-ray, I don't think, is going anywhere right away just because there's nothing that matches that presentation.
Yeah, and I think the only problem, like, as far as the upgrade from 2K would go is, like, the TVs, to even notice a huge difference, you'd probably have to have
you would need a TV capable of displaying that resolution.
Yeah, but you'd need a larger TV too, though, right? I mean, that would.
Well, I mean, watching a hypothetical 2K format on a 30-inch television set is going to be useless.
Yeah.
That's not going to give you anything. So yeah, you'd need. That's going to get to the point where people are not going to have room for the fucking TVs anymore. you know, that's just, you know. And right now, I'm sure there are 2K sets on the market somewhere.
Right.
Maybe. I don't know. I mean, I don't keep up with that as much as anybody else. I'm sure there's people listening to this going, of course there are dumbassers everywhere, but I don't know.
They're in Hong Kong.
You know.
Well, do you think it'll just bypass the whole 3D trend that's going on right now and go right to that? Like, that'll be the 3D trend?
I don't give a flying fuck about 3D.
I know. It seems like that's such a horrible idea to come along right now.
It actually seems like it's already sort of dying out, though, too.
Well, the weird thing about 3D is that, and I have to qualify this by saying that I cannot experience 3D because of a defect in my left eye from birth. It fucks up my vision in a certain way. 3D doesn't have any effect on me. So 3D has never worked for me and it never will work for me. But one thing I don't get about 3D is it just seems like it's an odd way to view a movie because you have to put these glasses on and it's darker and it creates this effect which, even as a kid when I was trying to figure out, I said, how do you watch the whole movie like this? And then also people are just telling me, and this is the feedback I'm getting, that there's films where it's really well done, something like an Avatar, or like a Toy Story 3 or How to Train Your Dragon. But at the most, it's just like it's a gimmick. It doesn't necessarily make the films better.
No.
It just provides a different kind of sensory experience for a little while. So, and then there's been all, and I think what's really hurt more than anything else is all these last-minute conversion jobs with all these films that were not shot in 3D, that were never meant to be in 3D, but all of a sudden the studio's like, we gotta have fucking 3D on everything!
Yeah.
And so now suddenly we end up with My Soul to Take in 3D, and I'm like, really?
Well, it's like,
you know, so I think the 3D brand has been hurt by that significantly. I think people are, now they're just like, why am I paying the extra money for something that's going to look like shit?
Yeah, and when they do that, though, it's not really like the 3D that people want to experience. It's more like you're watching a pop-up book or something. It's
yeah,
not
I
like
mean, Avatar, from what I understand, and that's still kind of considered the high watermark of the new 3D movement. From people who told me that really got into that and apparently worked really well was that it wasn't about throwing shit at the screen. It was about the depth of things.
Right.
It was about the experience. Like when they're flying over a mountain into a chasm, you feel like you're going over that mountain into that chasm with them. But you know what? The weird thing is, I have felt that experience by going to see an IMAX movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like Everest in IMAX, or some of the, like, I remember I saw one about the rainforest in IMAX on the big, like the dome projection screen where it felt like I was right there in it. And I thought, yeah, I could get that experience that way. I don't need 3D for that. I mean, I understand the push to try new forms of cinema, but it just seems like this is the wrong mechanism in which to do it. I think even if I could experience 3D, I don't think I would be a big fan of it, because it seems to me that the minute you put those glasses on, you're putting a wall up between yourself and the movie. And also, I don't think the brain is designed to register things a certain way.
No.
I think the only way you're ever going to get that immersive experience is if someday someone makes a hologram movie.
Yeah.
Where you're literally in it.
Which is common, yeah.
Yeah, fine. But that's not really a movie. That's a whole different experience.
That's like an amusement park ride or something.
Yeah,
know?
Which is fine. I look forward to the day when that sort of thing can happen. Or if it's an actual film that you're a participant in or something. I mean, that's a fascinating idea. I think 3D is a step towards that, but 3D will never be that. So
well, it just seems
I don't know. I think 3D is always a gimmick. It's a more complicated gimmick today, but at the end of the day, it's still the same shit. And the 3D that I kind of get a kick out of, even though I can't experience it, are the films where it's like throwing shit at the camera.
Yeah.
You know, like Friday the 13th Part 3D or My Bloody Valentine, or the one that's coming up that the Bloody Valentine guys did called Drive Angry, which was shot in 3D and clearly looks like a film where, like, you better duck because something's coming at you.
Well, I mean, I don't know if it's just me, but that's the way those films were always marketed to everybody. Was
oh,
that
yeah.
That was
like,
what was going to happen.
You.
Yeah.
You know?
But that's very rarely the case, it seems like, with 3D.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I mean, and I think it's admirable that James Cameron, his attempt is to bring more of a three-dimensionality to the whole film. It's more about the immersive environment to it. And that's great. I think that's, you know, to me, 3D, there's a limit to the effectiveness of that process after a while. And it's either, okay, I think we've gone as far with this as we can. Why not take what we want to achieve with this and create something entirely different? You know, I don't know. I'm probably talking out of my ass to a large degree because I cannot experience 3D, so I don't know what it's like.
Well,
but
I mean,
I've tried it enough times, and I've seen enough stuff that simulates it to a much more effective degree in terms of just that feeling like you're in the movie. That I don't know. I think 3D is something that's it's a marketing gimmick at this point.
Yeah, I mean, Hollywood's got to do something right now because they clearly have no good ideas for, you know, substance in a film.
3D.
You know?
They're announcing every fucking movie in 3D, and horror films are just getting 3D'd up the ass. And I just, you know, I mean, look, I don't really want to see fucking Texas Chainsaw Massacre in 3D.
No.
I don't, you know, Saw 3D. I just, you know, whatever. Just make the movies good and scary and then worry about 3D some other time.
They can't do that, though. they either can or don't want to.
But
no.
Getting back into the Synapse releases, there's actually a couple more that we didn't talk about on here that
mm-hmm.
you...
That I'm uber excited. I just found out about these, so I'm shitting my pants.
One of them's right Dolph Lundgren movie.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, Red Scorpion. Yeah, Don got the rights to Red Scorpion, and he's actually it was one of the things he was working on out there in L.A., and he's got a longer, a more uncut version of the film than has been released here before. So that'll be coming out. And we, Joe Zito, the director, apparently is all about being involved. Talked to Tom Savini. He's got some behind-the-scenes footage from the South Africa set. And, you know, we're going to reach out to a few other people as well and see if we can get... That movie has a very interesting history. Because it was produced by a guy named Jack Abramoff, who was a convict, you know, went on to become a very popular, successful lobbyist who was then committed, convicted of fraud and sent to prison and had a documentary and a movie with Kevin Spacey made about him. So it's a very strange film, and it's got a lot of weird history behind it. And I would, so that's going to be one we're going to do some stuff for. I don't know how much we can do, simply because some of the people are in jail or dead or... but like, I would love to get Dolph on camera to talk about, because that one was a pretty significant film for him. And
it was I don't think a lot of people, if you weren't born or raised around that time, then you don't realize that that was the movie that they were going to launch his like whole action career on after Rocky IV.
Yeah,
and that was the,
he did that, and he did, when did he do The Punisher? He did, it was like
Punisher was
Rocky
a little bit
IV,
later.
He
I
did
think.
Masters of the Universe, then I think he did The Punisher, and then this movie, or something, or maybe it's maybe it was backwards. Maybe I got this. It was Red Scorpion and The Punisher, but that was during that period where they were all about Dolph Lundgren.
Yeah.
You know, they were just like, he's the next big guy, and I think Red Scorpion came out, didn't do all that well, and I think that was pretty much it.
Yeah, that pretty much killed it. That killed his whole career.
A lot of bad, decisions, I think, as far as movies. Like the Masters of the Universe thing, oh my God.
Yeah, well, yeah. I don't blame him for that. I don't, he was, hey, if you're going to cast someone as He-Man, why not Dolph Lundgren?
Somebody please God do it like a documentary on that movie though. That I want to know what went on behind the scenes on that.
Yeah, I don't. I can tell you what Truman said. This movie's going to be a piece of shit. Let's just try and get through it.
Buckle in, folks.
What you could do is like you could have like the real Skeletor, like the cartoon. You could interview Skeletor.
That was bullshit.
Frank Langella was one of the good things about that movie. He was a good Skeletor, I thought.
But anyway, the other one that completely blows my fucking mind that's coming out is Intruder.
Yes.
Which I don't know, I don't know how many people are really familiar with this title, but it's a little known slasher film that's probably got one of the best setups and it's a small film, but it really packs a lot of punch in terms of like entertainment.
Yeah, this one was made by a lot of the Sam Raimi cronies. I mean, this was Scott Spiegel, who co-wrote Evil Dead 2. He was his writing and directing debut. Sam Raimi's in the film, has a major supporting role as the butcher at the supermarket. Basically, it's a supermarket slasher where it's the last night for the night crew, and then someone's knocking them off one by one as the night goes on. But the movie is filmed so crazy. I mean, Scott just love to put the camera in the weirdest places. I mean, he made Sam Raimi look sedate by comparison.
He did, yeah.
You know, I put the camera under the phone and the shopping cart, just everywhere you could think of. And it has some really weird dialogue and some really fun performances, especially from the lead actor, Danny Hicks, who played Jake the Redneck from Evil Dead 2. His performance in this movie is just, for me, makes the whole film because he just throws himself with wild abandon into this character of the assistant manager, and it's one of those performances where it's just like, God, how did he not get more work? Because he just sells it so well. But one of the reasons is that no one saw this movie.
Yeah.
It was one of the last films that Charles Band financed shortly after Empire collapsed, and it just got thrown to video on Paramount, and literally, it's one of the most notoriously censored slasher films ever, maybe even the most one, because every bit of blood was cut out. I mean, just like wholesale, all scenes with blood are just like chopped out of the film. It wasn't like it was watered down, it was just gutted. And I think it was an indicator, it came at the very end of the slasher cycle. I mean, the slasher films were just about dead when this movie came out.
Yeah, it's like 89, wasn't it? Like
89, yeah. Right around that time, like Friday the 13th was wrapping up, it was dying off. Even Nightmare on Elm Street was dying off. Slasher films had their heyday, they really weren't in favor anymore. And the MPAA was just being really strict. I mean, it was just like, fuck you, you're not going to get to see any blood. And so Intruder just got... My guess is, and I'll find this out once I start doing the documentary, and it's going to be a full-fledged doc for this, because I'm curious, did they even submit this for an R, or they just said, cut all the blood out, and then we'll get the R. We're not even going to go back and forth with them on this.
Yeah.
Because literally, there's so much missing from the movie, it's laughable.
Now, is this cut going to be?
There have been rumors for years that the uncut version, the negative for the uncut version, had been lost or damaged or destroyed. Because the only uncut version that's ever been out officially was Charlie Band's Wizard DVD.
Right.
Which didn't look all that hot.
No.
But, no, the negative, it exists.
Oh, shit.
The negatives are fine. And we've done, Donna has done a brand new HD transfer of it. It looks fantastic. And we're going to go to town with this one. We're going to get interviews with just about everybody who walked by the set, if I can help it. And one person, Scott's going to be involved. Hopefully we can get Bruce. Even though he's only in the movie for half a second. And don't worry. One thing this is not going to be is it's not going to be a DVD where it's like Bruce Campbell in Intruder.
Yeah. That's
like the last
with him
one
on the
was.
Cover.
Yeah.
Bruce Campbell is in the movie for approximately 60 seconds.
It really did. It really did have his name at the top of the film. Like Bruce Campbell.
Yeah, it's like Bruce Campbell. It's like he's at the end of the movie for 60 seconds. He doesn't even have a close up. I mean,
are you sure his name won't at least be on the back of it and have like burn notice?
No, it's on the front cover, and I'm going to also make sure that this cover, whatever we use, doesn't give away who the killer is. Every previous edition has given away who the fucking killer is in this movie right on the front cover. So I don't want to, But I mean, any fan of the movie already knows. But still, and there's going to be deleted scenes. We got a copy of his original work print, and the murder scenes were even fucking longer.
Sweet.
I mean, the bandsaw scene is fucking ridiculous because he's like, he tries to get the head through and it's like, he can't do it, so he has to back it up and push it through again. And back
That's awesome.
And I mean, I see why he cut it down. I think the uncut version, the director's cut, is exactly what it should be. But all the murder sequences were much longer in the work print. So those are going to be on the DVD as well.
I can pretty much like guarantee that Intruders 1 movie I never thought would might have a Blu-ray release.
Yeah.
Me either.
So I'm definitely...
I never thought the elements... Again, the rumor was always that the negative was lost. No one knew where it was. So the idea that you could even do a Blu-ray was laughable because all that's ever really existed was like an old one-inch master of the uncut version. So how do you make a Blu-ray out of that?
Mm-hmm.
But no. Don did some research and got with Charlie Band and found the negative or a negative material, an interpositive or something, and
so
we're going to have a brand new spanking HD transfer of the Uncut Intruder.
May will have it looking like Lord of the Rings.
Yeah. It's going to look nice. It's going to look and sound great. And like I said, I'm going to load it up with as much stuff. That's one of those few films that I'll go the extra mile for because that movie was a major, major favorite of mine growing up.
And if we haven't sold it already enough, I mean, this is, I think, the one of, if not the first film that K&B actually did as a group.
It was their first one officially at K&B FX.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so this was the first one they did. They did it for about $1.50.
Well, I remember we were at Horror Hound and we told Greg Nicotero about the screening and I don't remember exactly what he said. He seemed like he was a little bit embarrassed by the movie or something.
He might be in
it. Well, I mean, look, it was a quickie done that, but I think the effects are really, really great.
They're awesome. And those death scenes, I mean, I always thought they were some of the better ones in any slasher film. I can only imagine, like, the uncut versions of those scenes.
Well, it's funny. The uncut, y'all save some of the surprises for when you watch it, and I can see why they were cut down, because some of the effects, when you linger on them, don't quite work. Like, when the guy's head's getting in the trash compactor,
mm-hmm.
You can see one hole, as the compactor's crushing his head, you can see one hole side of the dummy head begin to swell up like it's a balloon that's about to burst. And then it just unloads with the big gout of blood. So it's easy to see why they trimmed it that way to make it look better. But it's fascinating to see the longer versions of it because it's like, Jesus, this thing was out of control. But I think Scott was right in trimming it back the way he did. That's the thing. I mean, it was his work print and then the final version was done after that. So it's not like the deleted scenes are stuff that meant to be put back in the movie. This is just stuff that existed, in a work print version before that, but it should be interesting to look at. But the movie will be his uncut director's cut.
Now, is there any estimated like release date on
those?
That,
I don't know.
Those?
I mean, I think obviously they want to have them out by the end of the year.
Yeah.
That's the plan. But
Halloween probably.
Yeah, I mean, obviously Halloween for Intruder would be ideal, but that's up to Don to decide. But I believe the plan is certainly this year, but again, that could change.
I was always curious, though, since we're talking about just Blu-ray releases and films that would look good and maybe not look good on Blu-ray or whatever, like, what is there any plan to do anything with, like, films like Cannibal Holocaust or Cannibal Frogs? I mean, some of those cannibal titles, I mean, as far as Blu-ray?
I'm sure there are. I mean, I think those are under Grindhouse's control as well. And I know an HD master of Cannibal Holocaust was done, so I'm sure that they could do that. I think Grindhouse is in the same situation a lot of smaller companies in. You know, when do you spend the money to do a Blu-ray? You know?
Yeah.
My guess is it would be a situation where probably an overseas company would do it before we get it here, but I would think, yeah, I mean, I would love to see those come out. I don't know what format those were shot in. I think they were both 35 millimeter features, but I'm not entirely sure. So I'm sure but you know what? Even a 16 millimeter film can look a lot better on a Blu-ray. I mean, look at Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Mm-hmm.
So it depends on how well the elements have been stored and how well it was shot to begin with. So
I'm sure eventually we'll see those, but it's like Grindhouse definitely just takes their time on stuff.
Bob Murawski, who runs Grindhouse, he has a full-time job as a film editor. I mean, he won an Oscar last year for The Hurt Locker, so he's got his day job. So he puts those things out when he can focus on them and do them right. I'd rather wait and have them done right than have them out every 6 months. So
that's true. But I guess that's it. I know we're going to be seeing you at Horror Hound here.
Oh, yeah.
Are both
of you guys going to be there this time?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's for sure, unless all somebody dies.
I don't want to do this. You know, Uncle Bill's off, you know, playing around in, you know, with the Tibetan monks or something like he was last time, or whatever the excuse was.
No, I've already.
Uncle Bill's off finding himself in Austin or something. I don't know.
We want to make a documentary called Finding Uncle Bill.
Yeah.
Yeah. We tried to find Uncle Bill, but he was off in Nepal, and we just don't know why.
No, I've already made the arrangements, like got the time off and all that stuff, so yeah, I'm definitely going to be there.
Good, because you know, none of that bullshit again.
It's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to be rocking and rolling. Actually, we do have a table for this show, so hopefully, like.
Woo!
It's not going to be as chaotic as last year's. So I don't know if
I wish
could
do another one of those midnight movie things like we did at Fright Night. That was fun.
Yeah.
And we probably could, but it's just some amount of notice.
Yeah. We could probably talk to Nathan and see if we can do something like that one of those nights.
Yeah. And then I know we'll probably do that again for Fright Night, whatever Fright Night ends up being this year.
Yeah, Fright Night is actually, did you hear about some of they're doing the Fandom Fest thing, which is more like pop culture along with mm-hmm. Fright Night, and I actually am really excited about a Revenge of the Nerds reunion that they have.
Let me guess, Anthony Edwards not going to be there.
No.
No, he never does.
He only shows up for ER reunions.
And did they get Ted McGinley, though?
No, they actually only have three so far. They have
Let me guess. They got Robert Carradine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They got Curtis Armstrong.
Yeah.
And what other guy would they always get?
Nerd!
Oh, they got that guy. Okay. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So I'm really excited about meeting that guy for some reason.
I'm just excited about meeting him for Bloodsport. I have so many questions to ask him about Bloodsport. Just that
he was
whole...
the best thing about Bloodsport.
He really was. He was just awesome. Him and Bolo Young.
I mean, granted, anyone can out-act fucking Van Damme off the screen, but... He had so much. That guy has so much more personality than Van Damme. I kind of wish Van Damme would die.
You know the thing, though.
Just so we can focus on that dude.
Van Damme, though, looked fucking like Robert De Niro compared to the teenage Van Damme. Do you remember the teenage Van Damme?
Oh yeah,
flashback.
Oh man, Jesus, that guy was. Yeah, I think they put him in there to make Van Damme look good.
Yeah.
I mean, because yeah, he's so fucking wooden.
Oh, my God,
it's like,
yeah.
I'm not sure if I'm looking at a telephone pole or an actor. I mean, it was bad. Yeah,
what
that was
you mean?
Bad. They went out of their way to find someone who delivers dialogue even more awkward than them.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was like.
I was like, holy shit.
But
God,
please
make this flashback be over.
I got to say, though, if you're a fan of, I don't know if you're a fan of Bloodsport or not.
I'm not.
How the hell can you? Oh, I don't even want to get into it.
I actually sort of like. I never was a big fan of it, but we watched the Blu-ray a couple weeks ago.
I'm sorry, there's a Blu-ray of Bloodsport.
Yes,
and it actually looks pretty good. Dude.
It is awesome Blu-ray,
which is surprising because I think the DVD was just full frame and looked kind of.
Yeah.
How the hell could you not like? You break my record. Now I break.
You know what? I'm gonna have to take back my. I haven't seen Bloodsport since it first came out, and I was not a big. I was not into that movie at all back then. I would probably enjoy it more now. So I will gladly take away my condemnation of the film until I see it again.
Yeah, it's on a two-pack with Time Cop.
Oh,
it's
you
like
love
a
Time Cop.
Right, two-pack for like $10.
You've got to have Time Cop in your collection anyway, so.
No, I don't really have to.
Well, I know the girl from The Burning is actually in Bloodsport, too, though.
Lee
Ayers?
Yeah.
Yeah, Bloodsport. Didn't they do a Bloodsport 2 without Van Damme?
They probably did.
I know they did like 15 Kickboxers without Van Damme.
Yeah, they put in Sasha Mitchell from fucking Step by Step. That was funny. Yeah, they did like, I know they went up to at least Kickboxer 4. I don't know if they did more than that.
They did 5 at least, yeah, because I've got four and 5 on like a.
I remember like after like part 3, they started having like, it was like a gun battles and shit in the Kickboxer movies. I'm like, what the fuck? It's supposed to be about kickboxing.
I know, it had nothing to do with Kickboxer after like the second movie. She's like, I just have to run around and punch people.
Yeah.
But this Kickboxer, no one cares.
That's true. They need to bring back Shokazugi, the ninja movies.
We're going to transition on to Shokazugi now.
Shokazugi, I know it may be heresy, but I never understood what people saw in him. Every film of Shokazugi's I've ever seen, at least the stuff that got released over here big time, I'm just like, what does he do exactly?
He's a ninja. I think that was his gimmick. Yeah. He's like the big ninja actor.
Yeah, and I just thought those movies weren't very good. The only one I like out of all those ninja movies was Ninja 3 The Domination.
Oh, hell yeah.
Oh, that movie's old. Yeah, Lucinda Dickey. Yep.
Yeah.
Like that opening sequence where they were trying to kill him in the first 15 minutes, that was like one of the awesomest fucking scenes in movie history right there.
Yeah, but in like Enter the Ninja is one of the funniest death scenes ever when the guy gets to like the throwing star in his chest and he leans back in slow motion with his arms outstretched as if to say, hey, why'd you do that?
Yeah.
It's just so funny. Or maybe that's Revenge. I can't remember which one the fucking ninja.
Yeah, there's like one called Nine Deaths of the Ninja and there's not even like 9 ninjas in it.
Yeah, he's the innovator of 80s ninja films.
Yeah.
Shokazugi.
Yeah, what is the order? Is it Enter the Ninja, Revenge of the Ninja, and then Ninja 3?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then he had like other ones called Pray for Death.
Oh, and, God, I saw that piece of crap.
He's got a ton of them, though, man.
Yeah,
like,
he does have a lot of them.
He has one, 9 Deaths of the Ninja, that has...
No, I remember that one. I remember 9 Deaths of the Ninja.
It actually has Anthony Kiedis' dad in it.
From Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Yeah, from Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Well, that's a distinction.
Yeah, but anyway. Yeah. We're going to need ninja movies on Blu-ray, too, though. I was thinking about that.
Let's do a whole show next time about ninja movies and, like, Bloodsport. That'll be it.
That'd be cool.
Bloodsport. Yeah, okay, I will have to revisit that one. And that's funny, someone else brought Bloodsport up to me recently and said, yeah, man, that movie's kick-ass. I'm like, really? Bloodsport? Really?
No. You have to go back and watch. I'm telling you.
I do remember the guy from Revenge of the Nerds because he plays, like, his buddy in the movie, right?
Yeah, and he's the one that's always, like, he's the roughhouse American guy that basically just is, like, a brawler.
Yeah, basically he's like the Sam Elliott to Jean-Claude's Patrick Swayze.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It is not that bad of a movie, though, I've got to say. Like, I actually, that was the first time I'd watched it in
about
10 years. And then
you got the other thing, too, that sells it is Bolo Young, who's revisiting the same role he's played in every film, where he was like, you remember him in, like, Chinese Hercules or...
I know Bolo Young. I remember.
Yeah, Enter the Ninja. He was actually in Enter the Dragon, I think.
Yeah.
I always liked him. I always liked him, and it's a stupid reason. I always liked him just because I like saying his name. Hi, look, it's Bolo Young.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of Bolo. How can you not like Bolo?
I'm pretty sure he doesn't speak any English either, and all his lines are dubbed in that film because it's just horrible.
The dubbing is just one of the reasons.
Well, they only give him, like, one or two words.
Yeah.
That's all he says.
Yeah.
But,
no, I need to say. All those 80s action movies, especially the ones that Cannon ended up being involved with, like American Ninja, those were fun.
Yeah, they had Tom Matthews lookalike in it.
Michael Dudikoff.
Yeah. He always did look exactly
For
like
years, him. I thought that was Tom Matthews, the guy from...
it looks just like him. It looks just like him. And Michael Dudikoff, he got like I don't know how he got so popular, but he did like 10 films in 2 years, and then no one ever heard from him again. But I never liked Michael Dudikoff because his last name has Duty in it.
Dudikoff.
Duty.
Hey, look, it's Michael Duty.
Hey, Michael Dudikoff.
All right, man.
I don't know, but it was always weird. My American Ninja, that title doesn't even make
sense.
The worst one of all time was, I think it was Cannon brought it out, or maybe 21st Century, but I don't remember which one. American Cyborg Steel Warrior.
That just sounds
what
great.
What the hell kind of title is that?
Is that something that Ruggiero Deodato made?
I don't know who made that. I think it was actually called American Cyborg Steel Warrior Part 1 or something. Like, they were already anticipating this was going to be so successful that they got to do a second one. But it's like American Cyborg Steel Warrior. That just sounds like four random words.
Yeah, it does.
That doesn't even sound.
They couldn't pick
like,
a name.
Call this out American Cyborg Steel Warrior. There you go.
Yeah, it's like Chinese box chair fighter.
Yeah, it's just like Chinese stairwell master rutabaga. There you go. That's your title.
Horse Terminator.
Yeah. Hey, I would actually pay to see Alien Horse Terminator.
Hey, I would Alien Horse Terminator. I can't imagine what that movie would be, but I would totally watch it. Alien Horse Terminator. God, that's it. So, you know what? Don't say it too loud, or the asylum will end up doing it.
Yeah,
that's true. Yeah, no, have fucking.
It'll be on Sci-Fi.
See Thomas Howell be in.
See Thomas Howell show up, and somewhere Lou Diamond Phillips will be.
Boy, oh boy, Slippy sure does have a fuckload of shit coming out, doesn't he, Uncle Bill?
As usual, yeah, he's working on about 10 different projects at once.
Yeah, he's rolling in the dough, buddy. He better take us out to eat next time we're at a convention. Give us some of that money, Slippy.
He'll take us out to McDonald's. That's all he'll do, though. Buy us a 20-pack of nuggets.
Ooh. I'd still eat them.
Heck yeah, baby, that free food, that's what I like. So anyway, we do have a special,
bag.
With Jethco.
Yay.
She actually said before that this is she wants this to be the last time she does the mailbag.
She's never going to do it again.
Never going to do it again.
But I don't believe her because she's never told the truth before.
I'll do a lie.
Yeah. That's the thing, folks. Now, since it's past Valentine's Day and everything, and everybody should know this, but I just want to let everybody know, never, ever trust a woman. Ain't that right, Uncle Bill? Never do that.
That's true.
What I do, that was so horrible.
They will steal your soul.
Yeah.
They do.
That's what I did.
Yeah. Then you have to learn that succubus song backwards to send them back to where they came from.
Happy morning after. I didn't even know that was a real song.
Yeah. It's a or the, what's it? Poseidon Adventures, the theme of the Poseidon Adventure.
Yeah, I remember we were talking about that. I had no idea. And I've seen it. I like the Poseidon Adventure. It's cute. But
it's not as good as The Sound of Music, is it?
I've seen it all the way through not too long ago for the first time. Mm-hmm. And I was shocked at how it ended.
I don't give a shit who you are. The Sound of Music is killer.
It is a really good movie. I was just really shocked at
the
end.
Did it make you poop your panties?
It was kind of sad. The ending is really kind of sad.
When Hitler takes over and kills everybody.
I was so... I had no idea anything to do with Hitler or any of that stuff.
Hitler coming there, beat the fuck out of her and took her land.
Shit.
Hey! Wiggin von Weinting!
I'm seriously...
I'm picked off like that! Look out!
Anyway. We got the bag.
See what these people have to say. Okay, Alexander Von Lumberjack. That's a pretty awesome name. He says, my fucking God, I've held my breath, but Jessica, how could you enjoy Cop Out? This is the worst movie of the fucking year.
Well, shit.
I already explained it, though, why I liked it.
Tell us.
The only reason why I really liked Cop Out was because I liked the music in the movie. It had really good music. Kind of reminded me of, like, 80s cop movies.
It seemed to be ripping off Beverly Hills Cop a lot, like the music.
Yeah, I liked it, though. I liked the music in that movie. And then I was like Tracy Morgan, how he was...
Tracy Morgan is just... He doesn't really fit in as a lead in a movie, though, I don't think. Like, he just seems like one of the jabroni guys that'd be, like, an extra in The Hangover or something.
He kind of was. I mean, he was a lead in the movie, but he seemed to be taking a backseat to Bruce Willis in that movie.
Well, of course.
But it still was just, I thought his character was pretty funny and how he was doing all those movie references. I liked it just because it was kind of a lighthearted laugh every now and then. It wasn't like I thought it was the best movie in the entire world.
I've never seen it.
I can't. I mean, you can't just say that either you hate every movie or you like every movie. You can't just.
I think that it just didn't work in some, like, what I know. I think I know what he was going for, but it just was too silly. Like, he made the whole thing just way too fucking silly.
There was parts of it I was laughing, but it was just one of those movies you pop in and you're really not going to watch. Maybe you're just laying there, have a headache, and you're going to fall asleep anyways, and you're going to watch a movie. It's kind of one of those.
One of those pieces of shit.
It just really doesn't really matter, but it was good.
Like, there's one of those movies that sort of sounds like that, that I never did watch all the way through, and I don't know if you guys have seen it, is Be Kind, Rewind.
Yeah, it kind of reminds you, like, movie. It reminded me of movies that really didn't work. And actually, one of them with Bruce Willis, like Hudson Hawk. Did you ever see Hudson Hawk?
Mm-mm.
That's one of those movies where it was attempting to be, like, a parody of those type of movies, but it was just so stupid and silly that it completely fell apart. And, like, nobody knew what it was trying to do. And that's kind of the way I feel about Cop Out, too.
By the bog.
I didn't like Be Kind, Rewind. That was really boring.
I couldn't watch it. I turned it off. I was like, what the fuck is this shit? You know? Because the plot of it, you would think it would be something like you would really dig.
Yeah. But I remember when we saw the previews for it, like at a movie.
Yeah, it looked real cool.
Yeah.
And even in the end of Be Kind, I remember Be Kind, Rewind, the end of it was really boring and sad, too. But
I just thought the whole movie was boring. Like, I don't know. It's one of those movies I never could get into at all.
Anyway, so that's the reason why
that's
I liked it.
Lumberjack Bon Leftover, whatever his name is.
Alexander
Bon Doodly Doo.
Mike Morrissey. Yeah, he was the guy who we're talking about how I liked
Morrissey yeah.
and the Smiths. I still like
Morrissey.
Named
the band after him.
Yeah. Well, he doesn't like Morrissey. Says, hey, y'all, have you caught Funny or Die Season 1 yet? It's out on DVD and it's hilarious. In case you don't know, it's a show on HBO written by Will Ferrell. I highly recommend it. It has some hilarious laughs. I've actually seen some of Funny or Die. I watched a couple of the episodes on HBO, but I can't remember.
I've never heard of it or seen it.
I've heard of it. I've never seen any of them, though, either.
They have a website. I think
if anybody wants to send us that, they can. We'll watch it.
FunnyOrDie.com. That's the one. Remember Will Ferrell was the landlady?
Yeah, girl? I remember seeing it on YouTube, like that one clip.
Yeah, with the little
girl.
Yeah,
the little girl.
That was actually from FunnyOrDie.com. And I think, what's that guy? He played in What's Eating Gilbert Grape?
Leonardo DiCaprio.
No.
Johnny Depp.
He played in Step Brothers with
John C. Reilly.
Yeah,
John C. Reilly. He does a lot of this stuff with Ferrell.
Is that the one where the, Between Two Ferns came from? Did that come from Funny or Die?
The Red Fern Grows.
With Zach Galifianakis. Where he's doing the interviews and stuff.
I think so.
Nobody remembers the show Zach Galifianakis had on VH1.
We do, because we saw, like,
That's where I first saw that motherfucker.
What was the name
of it? This has been 10 years ago. I think it was the Zach Galifianakis show.
Yeah, he did have that, yeah. It was like a fucking talk show or something, yeah.
Like, for a short while there, VH1 was making a major attempt to be, like, a real network, you know, with, like... You know, and they sort of latched on to that celebrity crap. That's all awful. But it all started like with that show, and they had another show that was actually pretty good. It was kind of like a Twilight Zone music show. It was like, I think it was called Strange Frequency or something like that.
Hmm.
And it was hosted by the singer of The Who. What was his name?
Roger Daltrey?
Yeah.
Shit.
Hosted by him. Nobody remembers those shows.
No.
Old
Crypt Keeper looking son of a bitch.
It was like 2002, 2003 when those shows came out, I think.
Were you watching a lot of VH1 back then?
I was watching those shows because I thought they were actually pretty good.
Swear to God. Okay.
But, okay, so Larry Johnson.
Grandmama! You're going to do some more of them commercials, buddy. I love them.
He says, non-movie question. LJ Push, mailbag question. Just was wondering what tunes, if any, were you learning or you just enjoy playing lately when time permits? I stick with the classics like God of Thunder from Kiss and DT from AC/DC.
Oh, God. What have you been trying to learn lately?
Nah, shit, I haven't really been playing that much. Like, I don't have time to play that much, but just trying to think of the last songs I was trying to learn. Well, you probably got some, though. I know one in particular, but they're all seem to be centered on movies and stuff now.
Yeah, I've been on a kick lately to do songs from movies, and I post them on my Facebook page like every once in a while. I did No Easy Way Out from Rocky IV, and I made like a did you ever watch that?
Mm-hmm.
It was like a best of Dead Pit shit or something, like a montage. And I'm actually working on right now figuring out the Never Ending Story theme.
Oh, God.
Which, that's not a guitar song, so it makes it a little more difficult, but that's one I've been figuring out. And I don't know. I'm always, like, fucking around on something.
Mm-hmm. I don't really have anything. I haven't learned anything new in the last couple of months, really.
The thing with me is that when I learn something, I pretty much forget it after I record a video of it and never play it again.
Well, you won't sit and learn the whole song, but you'll pull up some tabs and you'll play around with your guitar, so you're not really...
Yeah, I mean, it's just like a couple of minutes on something. Just figure out like the main part of it.
Yeah, he'll fuck around on it for a little while.
Mostly Journey, for some reason.
Yeah, Separate Ways is a really cool song, like when I forgot it now. I'd have to relearn it, but it'd be a real cool one to play sometime.
I always notice a pattern, though, that when we get real drunk, and we start playing guitar. I don't know how to play guitar, but I'll even attempt to when I drink. I'm like,
So you must play quite often, then.
I'm always drunk. Yeah. Yep.
So there you go. Yeah, like, there's a possibility, I guess, we'll bring guitars to Whorehound. I don't know. It just depends on how much room we have and shit.
There's also a larger possibility that everybody will be talking over us when we're playing.
Well, I did send off, I haven't sent it off yet, but I'm going to send it off where we were playing at Fright Night. And if he wants to use that in the new DVD, he can use parts of it and shit.
Yeah.
So we'll...
Fucking people.
Well, actually, the first few songs, they didn't talk over us.
Let's see. Newt138 says, okay, I got one for Uncle Bill. You are in an 80s slasher film and can only save one person. Will it be CK or Jessica? Oh, no. Uh-oh, we're both here in the room.
Oh, my God.
Think about it, but it's easy. Who you known longer? Who's been your lifelong buddy?
Who's the love of your life?
Oh, my God.
Oh, no. Think about it this way. Yeah. If you don't give the right answer, when you go home, what's going to happen?
Yeah, bad thing. I think I'll just I'll say myself. I'll just let you both
That's not really an option.
I'm not really worried about either of you.
CK or Jessica.
Buddy, you got to put me on your back and carry me to safety. Save me from Jason Voorhees.
That's a horrible, horrible question that I will refuse to answer.
He'd save me.
I get all you want.
No, he'd save me.
Ain't nobody can save you. You're doomed.
Oh, I'm doomed?
Yeah.
No, that's just...
She's going to be really mad now.
I think the problem is...
He better save me! I'm going to kick some ass!
He'll probably just go ahead and kill you and then save me, but he wouldn't have to save me. We'd probably both just kill you. Because you said you'd leave all your stuff to me, right?
Let me tell you something. Creepy never dies.
Mm. Okay.
That's the tagline for a movie.
I win.
You're a loser.
You two fight it out amongst yourselves.
Let's move on. We're never going to be in a slasher movie, so fuck it.
Awesome Wells says, hey, Uncle Bill and CK.
Hi, Awesome.
Answer this one seriously. What is the least amount of money you would accept to cover your face? With plastic wrap, lie on the floor and have an elderly relative shit on your face.
God.
He says, "It will be warm, but it won't touch your skin," and he'd take like $8,000 for it.
Well, if
I can't believe you're going to have to answer this question seriously.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you could, like, ask for as much money as possible, I'd just go the highest amount possible, like $100 million or something.
I think I'd let somebody shit on my face for real for $100 million.
He says, well, it's the least amount of money.
Oh, the least. Okay.
Yeah.
I think it would have to be, like, around the 10 grand mark.
For one of your elderly relatives to shit on your face.
So I guess it would be the real Uncle Bill would shit on my face.
Oh, God. That'd be a fountain of shit, dude. Like a fucking hose.
I better fucking just wrap my whole head and fucking, I won't be able to breathe.
Fuck. I'd say like 25,000 would probably be like the least amount I'd take to have like my grandmother or something shit on my face. First of all, how are you going to talk any of your relatives into shitting on your face to begin with?
Well, you'd have to split the money with them or something.
Well, and they'd have to give you money. Is it them giving you money, or is it like anybody?
There's a lot of questions involved in this.
The bank giving you money?
Is it just
is
some
one
random?
Of the most creative questions we've ever got.
Is it like Robert Redford in Indecent Proposal that comes along and he offers you money, like you know,
$1 million to annually rate Demi Moore?
Yeah, he offers you money, like have your relatives shit on your face, or is it like your relatives offer you money to have them shit
Can
on your face?
Can you just imagine you go, I will pay you $25,000 if you let me shit on your face.
You know what though? Like seriously, like if that was to ever happen, which of course it's not, I would be like, okay, 25 grand, but we have to film it. Like if I did something like that, I'd have to fucking film it because
you wouldn't want someone to see someone shitting on your face.
I would just want it for myself because I.
Like, you can go back.
Treasure the memory.
Hey, you go through the pain of that shit. You know, you might as well have.
That's kind of one of those things where something bad happens, you kind of wish you'd forget about it.
You want to keep going back and remind yourself. By the time your uncle
shit on getting ready to come out of his ass.
You're talking about different angles and stuff too. You can have a lot of.
What's
different
more
cameras.
Bizarre though? What's more bizarre than that is like,
there's something more bizarre.
There is porn out there that involves similar like things where these girls like they do this shit. They eat other girls' shit. You know, and rub shit all over their face and whatever, and then they get paid like $600 to do it. Like, you remember the interview we saw?
Yeah.
Boy, can't go flip fucking burgers. My God, if you need money, that doing stuff, nasty fucking shit like that for $600, goddamn.
What's even more disgusting is the people who get off on that.
Who gets off on it? Have you ever met anybody? Like,
I don't know, but they obviously...
Well, they have to. I mean,
they
make the videos.
Right, if they're making it, then there's obviously a demand out there.
I'm not even sure if anybody really gets off on it. If they just try to do the most ludicrous shit they can think of.
Looks like the two girls, one cup thing. I mean, that was a viral hit when that came out. I mean,
because it was just so absolutely just... I even watched it.
Yeah, I think everybody watched it.
I don't think it was real, though. I really don't.
I think part of it was, but part of like when they started eating it, it looked like fucking ice cream or something.
Well, they put it in the ice cream cup or something.
Yeah, but it didn't look like shit.
Well, I think what had happened was, is I think that they probably gave her like a reverse enema or something where they put something up her ass and then she shit it out.
What's more bizarre though, like, okay, to just think about how nasty this is. Like, I don't know about you, but accidentally, like, if you're wiping your ass, you get a little bit of shit on your hand or something. You're like, oh! And you use the magic, so I go, like licking the fucking hand.
That's graphic. That's making me kind of sick. Very few things ever make me sick, but that kind of did. Like, the thought of like,
who thought of that? Like, is the thing.
You chocolate know, covered hand.
Gargling pee is one thing. Fucking just like eating somebody else's shit. Like who thought of that? Like who was that? Like the person like, oh, that's sexy.
Charlie Sheen.
Yeah.
I don't know, but whoever thought of it is a seriously disturbed person.
Madonna
does it. That's how she keeps her young looks.
I do remember though everything that was involved in those shit eating tapes that woman was talking about. Like you have to eat rice, and, like. beans and stuff before you do it.
Red beans and rice is the best. She said, like, they before those videos that she films, like, I can't remember the girl's name. It was an interview talking about the shit tapes that she makes and stuff. She would eat, like, the night before red beans and rice, and then before she got to the studio again for breakfast, it would eat red beans and rice. And by that point, she'd be about to shit. She'd be holding it until filming. And when she films, they just say, let her rip, and they start shitting endlessly, like these two girls. And then they just rub it and eat it. And
rub
it on their bodies and eat.
I got a hot shit in my chamber. Hold on.
Yeah, I got something warm for you.
Baking brownies.
I hope nobody's eating while they're listening to the show.
It'd be so awesome if they were at that
Somebody
last.
Eating chili or something.
Cody's eating chili somewhere right now.
I don't appreciate you guys. Fucking Cody.
Aww. All right.
That's it, though,
that
I think.
Was it.
Yeah, that's a hell of a one to go out on, dude.
Hell of a bag, Bulls, hell of a bag. But we appreciate everybody for leaving their questions. You can leave them on the Dead Pit Facebook Universe page and the Dead Pit message board.
So thank you very much.
Ask more questions. So.
Talk about us shitting on each other.
Yeah. I'm sure we'll have at least two or three more questions next week regarding shit porn.
Mm-hmm.
So Rob will probably throw
to
one
bring
in
it
there.
Back up. Yeah, Rob's got a massive shit porn collection. So. but anyway, we're going to take a break and we're going to get to our movie reviews. We're going to have Blu-ray Death. We're going to be talking about two of them, baby. And we'll be back after this quick break here on the original Horror Talk Radio Show, DeadPit.com. Hey, Uncle Bill!
Yeah!
How you doing?
I'm good.
You know Dead Pit fans out there? Not a lot of them know about the midweek obliteration.
I thought everybody knew. It's the hottest thing going today.
You can go on Facebook. Check it out on the Dead Pit Universe page. Brand new show almost every damn week. You can hear us bullshitting.
And, in a historical first, there's a new member of Dead Pit. Jesco!
Hey, Jesco.
Hi.
You like joining in on the midweek obliteration every week? You like getting obliterated by two Eastern Kentuckians, don't you?
Lay it down with your sweet, sultry voice.
You obliterate all over my
you
face.
Know, yeah, you know you have a lot of guys that masturbate your voice on a weekly basis now.
Oh, God, it's Jesco! Like, oh, it's Jesco! She's so bringing the mail to me!
She's a girl. She likes horror movies. She's on Dead Pit. That's the perfect girl for me.
I'll just tame a little bit in my pants.
How's that make you feel? You're now like a hillbilly sexual icon.
A hillbilly sexual icon?
Yeah.
Oh,
like
shit.
Goats and yeah. Sisters.
And you can hear all about it. Hey. I asked Jessica some of the nastiest shit known to man almost every week on the midweek obliteration, and she answers it, and she has respect for it, don't you?
What the fuck? She has respect for
it.
I respect this
question. Yeah,
I
me,
respect.
For me, I, yeah, telling her about what a blumpkin he is and all that.
Oh, good lord.
She's going to try that on Uncle Bill over there.
Ain't nobody touching me when I'm shitting. I don't give a damn what the reason is.
Even if I go in there and be like, hey.
I'm going to get out. What are you doing?
She's like,
you crazy. Pull your dick out of the toilet. Give it to me. Oh, God.
Hear all that on the midweek.
Obliteration.
Yay.
Everybody.
Welcome back to Dead Pit Radio.
Welcome back.
I'm Uncle Bill.
I'm the Creepy Kentuckian. This segment of Dead Pit Radio is sponsored by Dr. Thunder.
And Food Club Diet Green Tea. So this is the review portion of the show. And before that, I guess you need to make some super serious announcements.
Yeah, we're winding down this week's show. We got announcements to make. The Retro Wrestling Channel, of course. Now, you need to pick out which WrestleMania you want to review on that channel.
I'm going with Part 9, with WrestleMania 9, just because I know, I remember how just uberly shitty that was.
Well, we're going to revisit it again a little bit. And, yeah, I'm actually, I should be up to almost part 9 by the time y'all hear this. So, yeah, the part 9 review will be rather soon. We might be able to do that next weekend or something.
Gotta enjoy that.
And I've had a lot of fun actually going back and looking at, I mean, I haven't watched all of them again, but going back and getting facts about all the old WrestleManias and stuff. And the plan is to try to have every fucking WrestleMania reviewed by WrestleMania 27. That could be hard to do, but I think I can do it.
You're going to review every WrestleMania? Oh, my God. They
get to be confusing, though, after, like, WrestleMania 14 to me for some reason. I don't know why.
That seems like a good idea at first, but that would be, like, absolute torture to try to watch, like, all
I'm not
going to
watch them all again. That would be impossible.
You're just going to review them from memory?
Yeah, a lot of them.
I would like to say that I have no idea what either one of you are talking about.
Well, you're going to, because we're going to watch WrestleMania 9 at your house.
You don't know what WrestleMania is?
No. I know we were playing a game.
Well, you enjoyed the game, it seemed
like.
Yeah,
the game.
SmackDown versus Raw.
WrestleMania is the World Series of wrestling, so to speak. It's like the biggest event in wrestling every year.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. It's okay. Like all the...
Well, you'll know what it is. We're going to watch WrestleMania 9. You'll see it. It's one of the shittiest WrestleManias. But,
it really is, but you'll love it.
Of it. So I'm doing that. That's basically the only thing like extra I'm doing. Right now, but we do have some pretty interesting possibilities as interviews go and stuff like that, so definitely stay tuned to the Facebook page and the YouTube and the message board and all that stuff. So without further ado, I guess we could go ahead and get on into it. The first one, I guess we should do this because we should do this one first because I'm doing the video review for this, and I don't know if it'll cut off.
Yeah, so this is when we watched, all three of us watched this last night, actually, and we'd seen the first one, we've all seen the first one.
Yep.
Adam Green's masterpiece of 80s memorabilia slasher films, Hatchet, and this is the Blu-ray of Hatchet 2.
The Blu-ray diff.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and I gotta be honest, like, you know, I would have guessed this was going to be awful anyway, but a lot of the folks out there, like, I don't know if I've heard a positive review for this movie. I mean, online.
You remember that tagline? I don't remember what movie it was for, but it was like, nothing can prepare you for the horror of... Oh, okay, yeah. The Texas Chainsaw Massacre, yeah. Nothing can really prepare you for the how shitty Hatchet 2 is. Like, even if you've seen the first Hatchet and hated it as much as we did, you really can't even imagine how bad this is.
Hatchet 2 was a million times worse than Hatchet, I feel like. It was unbelievably horrible.
Well, it just seemed like to me, I mean, for one thing, like Adam Green, and we've been hard on Adam Green, but like a lot of people think that we're really biased against his movies, but I beg to differ. I mean, go back and listen to the review we did of Frozen.
Mm-hmm.
And
well,
I think
we begrudgingly kind of like gave him some respect.
I just think like the problem with the Hatchet movies is, well, the sequel definitely doesn't have the budget that the original did. I mean, you can tell that from the makeup effects and just the look of the movie itself. I mean, the movie looks like, to me, it looked like one of those, as far as visually, it looked like a Lifetime movie or something like that.
It seemed to be. I mean, it looked like it. And then the way the beginning of the movie, the dialogue and circumstances, everything just seemed to be like a Lifetime movie.
Yeah, it had like a really cheap video look to it. Like, I don't know really, you know, technically how to explain it, but...
The thing is, that was
the least of the problems.
Let's just go ahead and start, like, pick up where this movie actually begins and the first movie left off, which, I'll be honest, I haven't seen the first movie all the way through since the very first time we watched it. We watched the Blu-ray. I somewhat watched it, you know, a little bit earlier.
You were stoned.
I wish I was stoned. It would have made it a lot better. But I'm guessing that Danielle Harris is supposed to be the girl from the first film that's left.
Yeah, I think Mary Beth was her name.
The boat, yeah.
But I don't know if they ever called her Mary Beth in the sequel.
And she survives the first film at the beginning of the second one and swims to safety and then...
Oh, yeah. This is Wes's favorite person.
Yeah,
Cunt-Eye Willie.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. John Carl Beekler is like the guy that's, like, I guess, saves her and takes her in and... She goes back and finds Reverend Zombie, played by Tony Todd, of course, who actually has like a lot bigger role in this film than he ever had in Hatchet, the first Hatchet, or any real other films he's been in.
The original Hatchet, he was in there for what, a minute?
Yeah, maybe? He was just kind of like there as a cameo, and this one he's actually got like a lead role, I guess. So the whole plot is they put together a posse to hunt down and kill Victor Crowley. Yeah.
And the Asian dude from the first movie is back playing
a twin brother,
yeah. And
Tom Holland,
yeah.
I know it's weird.
He shows up and he's like, he plays Mary Beth's uncle, I think.
Tom Holland, for people that don't know, is a director, though. He directed Fright Night and Child's Play and different movies like that. He's not an actor by any means. I mean, he was in films like Psycho. He was in Psycho 2 and a couple other films as an actor, but just bit parts, like no, like cameo, yeah. Like he was in cameos.
And then you also had R.A. Milhoff, who was the big burly bearded dude. He was also in Texas Chainsaw 3, and he used to be a pro wrestler. He had a pretty big role in this movie, too.
Yeah.
And then you had the guy that was doing his best Sinbad impersonation throughout the whole movie.
I think that he was probably the most enjoyable character throughout the entire movie. Some of the things that he was saying, I was laughing at.
Yeah, even he was slightly annoying.
That's the problem, though,
getting enjoyment out of this movie is like trying to pick, like, enjoyment out of taking a shit or something. God, that pop felt really good.
The problem is Hatchet, the first Hatchet, we feel as though, at least I do, feel like it could have been saved if maybe it was meant to be funny. If it was meant to be funny, then it probably could have been saved. Frozen, I actually thought was pretty good because it's like that creepy kind of thing.
I think Frozen had problems, but I mean,
yeah, it wasn't that bad at all. No. But Hatchet 2, there's nothing that could have saved this at all because clearly you know that he was trying to take himself seriously now. And the first one, maybe if you were hoping, if you liked him and you liked the way he was doing things, you could have thought that he was trying to be funny, but this one, there's nothing you could do about
it. Like, if you had a checklist, and I was sitting over here and I was like trying to describe to somebody like all of the things about this movie that sucked. You got makeup effects, sucked. You put acting, fucking horrible. Script. Like, there was really nothing. There's no
cinematography.
Script there. Just everything you can think of. Everything you can think of in this movie is awful. Like, for instance, we were talking a little bit about the makeup effects and things in it. Okay, the first movie had, like, state-of-the-art practical makeup effects. I mean, the shit looked amazing. This movie, it's like, the makeup effects are off somehow or another. I don't know how to explain it, but they're not.
It looks like something from like a full moon movie or something. Like they had that kind of a budget.
It's just, they're just not there. And even the last scene, which I guess is supposed to be the big makeup effect with Tony Todd, is like, it just looks silly because it looks so fake that you can't get into it. You're not scared. You're just kind of like, this is so freaking stupid.
Yeah, it's almost like Adam Green didn't make this movie. It's almost like they brought somebody else in, because it seemed like, if anything, like to Adam Green, the first movie, the death scenes and all that stuff was great. That was the best part of Hatchet, and they had awesome gore effects and gore scenes and really over the top stuff. But in this one, like, the blood looked like fucking chocolate milk or something. Like, every little detail was off. And Victor Crowley, the look of Victor Crowley in this movie was like fucking.
And especially the child version of Victor Crowley. Oh my God. That was some of the worst looking stuff I've ever seen.
The thing is they had Kane Hodder, and who was playing, I guess, Victor Crowley's dad. And you got to see him. And then when you seen Victor Crowley himself, because he did a lot of close-ups on his extreme retard look,
he's full-blooded retard.
Kane Hodder, you could see it right in his eyes and throughout the whole part in the, it just, you could see it. And it kind of took away from I guess if you were supposed to be scared by the way Victor Crowley looked, but he just looked like Kane Hodder. It was horrible. The death scenes were very confusing. I was more confused about what was, like, with the Tony Todd thing.
Mm-hmm.
I was really confused about what exactly was going on and why he was still alive even at that point.
Well, I mean, those were always over the top, even in the first one, but...
Well, yeah,
I think the idea was they peeled his skin off.
I guess,
but... I think you're supposed to see the muscles.
But it didn't look like... It looked like the fucker had... I don't...
It just looked like he just got doused in
blood.
But anyway, that really, the makeup effects are the least of the problems. And there's the acting in this is like...
Yeah.
Okay, it's anchored by Danielle Harris, and we've...
Who still did horrible. I thought she did awful in this movie.
But I'll tell you what did good is her eyebrow.
That's true.
Like, it sounds like I won a supporting actress award.
Yeah, I'll definitely talk about her eyebrow in a second, but like, it seemed like her character was just like, every word she said was like,
well, she had a southern accent too. Like, where the hell did that come from? Why was that necessary?
No, she lost it in the middle of the movie, but then she got it back.
In the end,
and then she lost it at the very end. So she wasn't really sure if she was southern or not.
So she did, like, I usually like her in movies. I think that overall she's a pretty good actress, but I guess a lot of it had to do with the direction she was given, the script and stuff like that.
You can't blame it all on that.
And We were talking about this earlier.
Blame it partially, at least.
We were talking about this earlier. I don't know what happens to these actors and actresses when they're young kids. They're just amazing actors. And she was an amazing child actor. I mean, there's no doubt about that. As she's gotten older, it's like she forgot how to act. Or she forgot how, like, to get back to that place where she was a kid. Corey Feldman has done the same thing. And I've seen other child actors do, like, exactly the same as well. It's like they just lose it at some point, I guess maybe through.
Well, I think, yeah, after a while, like, the best kid actors probably just don't even think about what they're doing and just sort of do it. But then in my opinion, the best kid actor of all time was Jerry Mathers on Leave It to Beaver when he was, like, really little. And then you notice, though, as the series went on and he grew a little older, he sucked, you know, because... I guess his conscience was getting, and like he was like, oh, am I going to do this right? Am I going to deliver these lines right? And the same thing happens with all the other ones, too.
I guess that's it. And some of it has to be drugs as well. I think it's like with Corey Feldman's. But back to Danielle Harris in this film, it was bad. I mean, it was noticeably bad. Like, even in comparison to like Tony Todd.
She was over the top.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I was distracted throughout, and we were talking about the eyebrow thing, and evidently a lot of people were talking about the eyebrow thing online.
Well, how could you not notice it? It's just so prevalent in the film. Yeah. It's so there.
And, like, I don't know if you get a clear answer on exactly what it is, but, like, I've seen pictures of her where her eyebrow does look fucked up, and I've seen other photos where it doesn't. Like, I don't know if it's some sort of allergic reaction that she has every once in a while. Or what? You know,
she had an allergic reaction to shitty films.
Yeah. But her eyebrow was like, it was like she was really smelling what The Rock was cooking in this movie. I mean.
The Rock says, yeah. It was fucking ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like from the start of the movie, like we were right from the start, we were like, there's something weird about her. And then you start to really notice what it is as it goes on. Her eyebrows up like 4 or 5 inches above her forehead, like, and the other one's just normal.
Yeah.
It just like stays in one spot.
You can.
And her eyebrow, the other eyebrow doesn't move.
Yeah, and it's distracting from everything else that she's trying to say. All you can do when you see it is just stare at that eyebrow.
You're
not paying any
attention
to what she's saying or anything.
Yeah.
And I don't. If you can watch that movie and not be fixated by that, I'd just love to meet who you are.
I've noticed, though, too, like a lot of the other movies she was in, she had, like, bangs down.
As the movie goes on, she actually puts her bangs down, like, over her eye and stuff.
So, I mean, that...
You can kind of see a scar, maybe, underneath her eyebrow, the fucked up one. You can maybe see a scar. Maybe Botox, maybe something she had to some kind of surgery or something done. But that's definitely not a problem where she plugged her eyebrows too wrong. It's... Nothing like that, because one is way up higher than the other, but it doesn't move, so it feels like it might be a Botox problem.
Yeah, like I was saying, I mean, I've seen photos where she looks fine. I mean, it is, the other eyebrow is slightly up there. Man, we're talking about, this damn thing was halfway up past her forehead, you know.
It's just like she was permanently just surprised.
Trust
in
me,
one eye.
Hey, let me tell you something. Yeah.
Had an overly concerned look.
And I've been a big Danielle Harris fan for a long time, okay? Me and Rob had an awkward moment at a convention one time where we were, like, across the aisle from each other. This was years ago. This was a couple of years ago. And we were both staring at Danielle Harris, watching her walk away, and their eyes met, you know, watching each other. So, yeah, I have never, ever noticed that before. So I don't know if it's the fact that she always had it covered up in movies or what, but I've never, I mean, that just blew my mind. Every time they had her, like in the, I guess in the beginning part of the movie, yeah, the rest of the movie, she had it covered up with her hair.
Right.
That was really distracting to me.
But the ultimate though, I guess culmination of the movie at the end, and I started thinking about this after we watched it, was really like a big Halloween ripoff, like a Rob Zombie's Halloween ripoff.
Yeah.
It's kind of the same exact kind of ending if you think about it. And
but Adam Green considers himself an innovator.
God. Mm. I hated everything about this movie.
There's something about this movie that we're just clearly not understanding.
I know I will never, unless we do some sort of commentary, like have to watch it. I know I'll never ever watch this movie again. Yeah. It's just there's no, I even kind of like wanted to watch Hatchet again to see the death scenes, but I know there's nothing in this movie I ever want to watch.
Well, it's just again. So poorly done, like on every level. And the fans of the original Hatchet, I mean, there are people out there that said they loved the original Hatchet that hated this. So, yeah, whatever. We'll just have to.
But look at this shit. This is the thing. And I saw another quote in, I think, Rue Moore magazine, but you got, you know, Dread Central, twice the gore, twice the intensity.
Yeah, that guy was in the movie.
You got the AV Club, great qualities of gore, and then you got.
Oh,
like,
they're best friends with him.
And then, but I did see a quote in Rue Morgue that Blood Disgusting said it was the best slasher film of all time.
Oh no.
Well, Blood Disgusting, that's their thing. They use that to get their quote
like,
anywhere.
It's not on here. I would imagine it would be. I don't know if that's just something that they like threw out there to put in Rue Morgue or something, or if somebody just made that up, but I swear to God, if you watch this film and think it's the best slasher film of all time, then you are a fucking idiot.
That right there is the best slasher film of all time, folks. Madman.
Maybe everybody just keeps talking about the gore because that might be the only positive part of the movie.
The gore sucked,
yeah,
though.
But it was horrible. There was
maybe
like,
that's the only thing that they can actually call on without feeling too bad.
Well,
about
really,
it.
That's the only thing in Hatchet, in the first Hatchet, that anybody ever talks about.
And I'll give them credit. Hey, the gore in the first Hatchet was good. The gore in Hatchet 2, no. Was not good at all.
Well, there was this part in Hatchet 2, though, that was cracking up when that chick was getting fucked.
Yeah.
In the woods. And then that guy's death scene, and she's all
he got his head locked off, and that goes, oh, no!
Fucking her. Like, oh, my God! He didn't go limp on me.
Yeah, he really laid into her for about five more beats, and then he fell over. Which I don't think that's possible at all.
No, but. I didn't like the part, though, where she got right in the snooch.
Yeah,
with
he
the
axe. Axed her in the crotch. That was great, though. That was funny. I was cracking up at that.
But aside from that scene,
but the rest of it was shit.
Yeah, we remember that.
The only reason maybe you should watch this movie is for that scene.
Like, when you watch these
and
movies, like Adam Green. Adam Green. Yeah, Daniel
Harris's
eyebrow. Which I think just for that alone, we've got to do a commentary over this movie.
Yeah, Daniel Harris's eyebrow is a classically trained thespian. But just that one eyebrow.
I don't know why you want to do that to me.
That eyebrow's like walking around up there.
Yeah.
Oh.
So you got the Daniel Harris doing the rock impersonation, and you got fucking John Carl Beekler is one
Gun-Eye Willie. And you got Candyman. He's doing like Tony Todd's doing Candyman.
Tony Todd, that's his biggest role since fucking Final Destination 1. Yeah. Hatchet 2's the worst slasher movie of all time. How about that?
It's close. It really is. Like, it's got to be close to some of the worst slasher films I've ever seen.
And here's the thing. Like, and people say this, like, that we're overly, like, negative towards Adam Green. And I wouldn't be, aside from, like, he's one of those guys that's just completely full of himself. And, like, you remember, like, all the quotes. And we can talk about this, too, because I think this is bullshit. Especially knowing that one of the fuckers is actually in the movie from Dread Central. When Dread Central started their campaign, support unrated horror, and they have fucking, okay, if you want to put out a campaign, put out the support unrated horror thing. Don't put, like Adam Green's Hatchet 2 is later, so the fucking do October. That's just all.
Let's be honest, though, man. All those guys are from the same area, and they're all just jerking each other off. At the expense of other people that watch and enjoy horror films, because that's all this stuff about it being this great film is all a bunch of bullshit. And anybody that watches this film will, I'm sure, agree with that. They're just fucking. It's like if we got together with a bunch of people around here in Kentucky and they were just sending us films and letting us be in their films and shit, and then we were like become friends with them, and then you lose like any ability to decipher if the films are really, really good.
Yeah, I mean, it's why, just my personal opinion, like these internet websites, their reviews, I don't listen to any of them. Because, like, I think, especially the ones that are based in California, and these guys give them, oh, I'll give you a little role in this movie. Or, you know, you put me, do this little fucking stupid internet campaign on Facebook. They don't give a fuck. I mean, the whole thing is, to them, is to be a part of it or something. Like, if they, like, they want to be in movies and stuff. Fuck them. Sorry, I say.
Yeah. So, that's Hatchet 2. Let's see.
If you want to hear honest reviews, go Dead Pit. Don't listen
to me. Let's see what special features that I will never watch. Hatchet 2, Beyond, or Behind the Screams.
Beyond Thunderdome.
Yeah, Beyond Thunderdome. Production and audio commentary track just featuring the writer-director, Adam Green, cinematographer Will Barrett. This had a cinematographer in it. That's amazing. And makeup effects supervisor Robert Pendergraft. That's Teddy Pendergraft's brother.
Will Barrett worked on a lot of Lifetime movies.
Yeah, Will Barrett. And cast audio commentary track featuring Adam Green, actors Kane Hodder and Tony Todd. Special features have not been rated. It's the unrated director's cut, though, and it comes out from
Schnikes.
Dark Sky Films.
Yeah. The Blu-ray, what do you think? The Blu-ray disc looked magnificent, though. As good as a movie like this could look.
Absolutely luscious. You could see the eyebrow twitch and fly around.
Throw this one in the trash, folks. So, the other one, though, that is actually a complete 360.
A lot of people don't like this movie, though.
A lot of people don't. This movie. People want to be super serious all the time. Mm-hmm. But I think every once in a while, you need a movie like this that's just not really meant to be taken serious. And I'm very impressed that Alex Zsa directed this.
Are you sure we never reviewed this? I mean, I know we did, like,
we reviewed On the Road. We did On the Road.
Yeah.
That's it. That was actually the first On the Road Jess was ever part of.
Yes, it was.
Oh!
Oh my God.
I gotta say, like, I think the only problem when we saw it in theaters is the 3D.
Yeah, it was bad.
Because I really enjoyed it a lot more watching it, you know, on a regular TV. And to me, it didn't seem like it was lacking anything, not being in 3D. Because, like, it was one of those movies that was, in post production, they made the Piranhas were actually in 3D. But
yeah, the only parts you can tell, the parts that were supposed to be in 3D, they're the parts that are like CGI'd throughout the film.
I like the 3D dick part. That was pretty funny.
Yeah. Where it pukes up the dick.
The synchronized swimming, that was in 3D.
Yeah,
too.
Synchronized nude swimming. Yeah,
this is a movie just straight out of the 80s. Like, has a mix of like a lot of movies like the original Piranha and like movies like Meatballs and stuff too that were just like overtly gratuitous.
Yeah.
And it just felt like a movie that wouldn't be made today for some reason. I guess that's a big reason it wasn't that big of a hit.
Well, it was completely un-PC in all ways. I mean, with nudity, like tons of nudity and tons of gore, and it didn't really adhere to a lot of the way that they make these kind of movies today, which I guess made it seem like it was an older style film. If you've ever seen Piranha, it's basically the same with a little bit of difference in it, which is at the beginning of the film, Richard Dreyfuss is fishing. He knocks like a beer bottle off, and it creates like a chain reaction explosion that releases these prehistoric piranhas out into this lake. And that's really the whole story, I guess.
Oh, hell breaks loose after that, baby.
This movie was just so fun. There was so much blood and gore in this movie, and if you didn't like anything else but the part, the gore part it was amazing.
Yeah, when it all breaks down, when they're like the piranhas attack everybody, It's fucking chaos. Like, you don't see too many movies nowadays like that, that is just nonstop.
And that's the thing, insanity. Is that it stayed on it for a really long time, where you think those other parts, other movies would go and quick.
How could you not love a movie that has the Eli Roth death scene like this one has?
Alright, well, you need to calm down.
Well, another thing too, though, the gore in this film looked really, really amazing. I mean, it looked real in a lot of the scenes.
Well, and this was one too. Like, I don't know if you caught the Greg Nicotero.
The cameo where
he's carrying one of the bodies that. Like, there were a lot of scenes where the piranhas had eaten down to the bone, and you could see like feet and then the legs hanging there, and that was just really well done. I think a lot of that was like visual effects.
Yeah,
like they did that later on.
It's just, some of it was really hard to watch, even for me. I've seen like a million horror films now, but a lot of it was kind of sickening in a lot of ways.
I like the cast in this movie though, too. I think Jerry O'Connell was awesome.
He was. He had a great role in it. I didn't mind Elizabeth Shue that much, even though she kind of looks like she doesn't know what the hell's going on.
She's a cougar.
But she's a good enough actress to be able to pull it off. The kids in it were really good, too.
Yeah.
The two little kid leads were really good
actors.
The kids
were annoying, but they were all right. Yeah. And, like I said, there's just so much like gratuitous nudity and violence in this too. Like if you're a fan of you know those movies from the 80s, Christopher Lloyd makes a brief appearance in it, and
which is pretty cool to see him and Richard.
Bing Rhames is in it.
Yeah,
plays the same role he plays in.
He has a pretty hilarious death scene where he's actually like with the motor of a. Boat.
Yeah, I didn't really understand why he did that, but alright.
He just committed, suicide.
But tried to kill off as much of the piranhas as he could, I guess.
And those things just, I like the ending, too, how the ending was like that.
So where's the
I don't know that guy's name, but I've seen him in other movies before. The guy who played that one scientist, the lead scientist, that boy. I've seen him in other movies, and I like him, he's a good actor.
But, you know what, I really love this movie quite a bit. I think, as far as horror movies go, it was my favorite movie last year, that we saw theatrically.
Well, what it really boils down to is it's a fun movie, very high energy, with a lot of just excess in it, violence and nudity and that kind of thing. And it doesn't really try to have any kind of story in it other than, you know, the setup for the piranhas to come out, and it doesn't ever get above its raisin, so to speak. It just kind of stays in one spot and does really, really well at that.
Yeah. So the only problem with this is, I've noticed this more and more. I don't know why this is. It's the same thing on the Machete Blu-ray. As far as extra features go on this, you have a commentary and it says 10 behind the scenes featurettes, which I'm guessing those are pretty brief. Doesn't seem like they're doing a whole lot when it comes to extras on these. Now we did get the Blu-ray 3D version, but of course none of us has the 3D capability, and I don't know if we'll probably never get it.
No, I don't think so.
But the Blu-ray 3D actually works. I don't know how it does, but it works on regular Blu-ray. So we got to see it in regular Blu-ray, and I thought the Blu-ray looked unbelievable. I mean, it was really...
It did look really, really good.
It was, so vivid that it was seriously almost hurting my eyes, how colorful it was and just really detailed. And there's so much stuff going on the screen. You know, it really captured it well, and I thought that it just looked really, really good. So I would highly recommend this movie on all counts, aside from the fact that it didn't have that many features on it or anything. But, hell, you can take what you get, I guess.
What do you say?
I loved it.
She liked it a lot.
You going to recommend it for viewing?
Yes.
I recommend it, too.
I give it the highest recommendation, too. Just, if you like those kind of, B-movie titles from Roger Corman like you did before, it's kind of like an updated version of that, really.
Yeah. And you can get the Blu-ray for, about $20?
I guess the only thing that would be missing in this would be the noise that the piranhas made.
Oh, yeah.
I love it. The noise that it made.
Yeah, it's a fun movie, though, and who knows? I mean, I know John Carl Beekler will get back to his ass again. He's supposed to be working on Piranha 3DD. Remember hearing about that?
No, I didn't remember that.
That's supposed to be his movie. He's going to be the one. I think it's John Beekler, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, which guarantees it's not going to be released theatrically.
Poor fella.
Old Cun Eye Willie's back. So anyway, that has been it for the show. I definitely appreciate everybody for tuning in, and
appreciate Michael Felcher for talking to us for about an hour and a half.
Yeah, Felcher, that was a hilarious chat with Slippy from all things kickboxer, Bolo Young, Shokazugi. My God, we talked about everything.
We did. That was ridiculous.
Yeah. But we will be back next week. You may want to stay tuned to the website. We may have some interview news for you or something like that. Who knows? We'll just have to wait and see. But appreciate everybody again. And until next week, I'm the Creepy Kentuckian.
I'm Uncle Bill.
I'm Jessica.
Oh, and I want to let you know. Enjoy it.
The DFPR.
You better keep listening, or I'll finger fuck you to oblivion.